Start me up on the other side. I've been running hard, running hard, taking on the other side. Hey, start me up. Baby, start me up and never stop. You make a dead man come. 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 You make a dead man come.
Stay tuned for Quality News Network at the time.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill today, House Democrats picked their leadership positions for the 110th Congress. In an upset for the number two job, the hand-picked choice of soon-to-be Speaker Nancy Pelosi was defeated. Maryland Representative Steny Hoyer beat Pennsylvania Representative John Murtha to become the next majority leader. Pelosi herself was unanimously selected to be the next Speaker of the House when the next Congress convenes in January. More than a week after the congressional midterm elections, there are still seven House races that are undecided. Five of them are too close to call, and two others will be decided in runoff contests next month. In Baghdad, an arrest warrant was issued today by the Iraqi Interior Ministry for the head of the Sunni Association of Muslim Scholars. The leader of the influential group is wanted for inciting terrorism and violence in Iraq. However, some fear this will increase the sectarian violence in the country. Also in Baghdad, as many as 80 kidnapped victims are still in captivity, according to Iraq's higher education minister. The 70 who were released had been badly tortured. They were all taken from a downtown Baghdad government building in a brazen kidnapping by armed gunmen on Tuesday. The U.S. military reports four more U.S. soldiers were killed in combat missions in Iraq. That brings the American military death toll to at least 44 so far this month. President Bush is in Singapore as part of his Asian trip to shore up American allies. The president gave a speech in which he called for a rejection of any tendency toward isolationism. Pakistan said today that it successfully test-fired a new version of a medium-range nuclear missile. As part of a UN resolution passed last month, French officials are inspecting the cargo aboard a North Korean ship in the Indian Ocean. They are looking for any nuclear material. Republican Senator John McCain has filed paperwork today to form a presidential exploratory committee for the 2008 race. Former Wisconsin Governor and Bush Cabinet Secretary Tommy Thompson also said he's planning to form a committee to seek the 2008 Republican presidential nomination. Nobel Prize-winning free market economist Milton Friedman has died. He was 94 years old. Friedman wrote more than a dozen books in which he championed individual, political, and economic freedom. And today marks the 30th anniversary of the Cancer Society's Great American Smokeout, a day for smokers to try and quit. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Researchers have found that happiness has a strengthening effect on the immune system and that people with happy dispositions tend to suffer less when they do get colds. Walmart plans to have its $4 offer for a month's supply of generic prescription drugs available in all 50 states by January. The Los Angeles City Attorney's Office has filed criminal and civil charges against Kaiser Permanente Hospital for allegedly dumping homeless patients on Skid Row. In Nashville, the nation's largest for-profit hospital chain HCA will go private. Shareholders approved the $21 billion leveraged buyout. The biggest radio station owner in America, Clear Channel, will be acquired by an investment group for nearly $19 billion. The buyers will also assume $8 billion of the company's debt. The Securities and Exchange Commission is looking into Dell's accounting. The computer company delayed its quarterly earnings report as a result. Across the country, customers are lining up at stores such as Best Buy and Walmart ahead of tomorrow's release of the Sony PlayStation 3 video game console. Rival Nintendo's Wii will go on sale on Sunday. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $56.10 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow had another record close for the third day. The Dow was up 54 points at 12,305, NASDAQ up 6, S&P 500 up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramov.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome aboard. It is Thursday. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I might be a little bit distracted tonight. My beloved Mountaineers are on TV. Kickoff is 7:30 Eastern. So I might have to rely on some intrepid listeners to occasionally update me with scores between 7:30 and our sign-off at 9. This is, of course, our game against Pitt. You know, some people call them the University of Pittsburgh. We call them Pitt. And we say, eat Pitt. Because it rhymes. And we tell jokes like, why does the Monongahela River flow north? Because Pitt sucks. We've been playing them for over 100 years now. It's one of the oldest rivalries in the country, WVU and Pitt. In fact, we've been playing Pitt since back before WVU was the Mountaineers. Once upon a time, we were the West Virginia University Snakes. I kind of like that. You don't have any football teams out there called the Snakes. So hating Pitt is a degree requirement for getting out of WVU, or as we like to refer to it, Harvard on the Mon. Somebody help me out with some score updates, please, as we go along the way tonight. Just a few bits and pieces that bear mention going into the program. Hell is one soul heavier as we speak. Milton Friedman has died. Living proof that only the good die young. Milton Friedman shuffled off this mortal coil and went off to his reward at the tender age of 94. Milton Friedman, of course, you may know, is the greatest, was the latest greatest living proponent of the so-called free market. Ick. You know, just ick. This was a guy who said, screw working people. Working people will take whatever the market will pay them. And they don't need insurance, and they don't need pensions, and they don't need unions, and they don't need labor protection, and they don't need safety regulations, and they don't need a future. What we need is a free market. In other words, Milton Friedman spent his entire career, most of which was at the University of Chicago, which for some reason or another seems to be just a den of, well, snakes. Synchronicity carries over, doesn't it? And you know that Milton Friedman was scum when you see a statement from a guy named like Fred L. Smith Jr. at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which just gets millions of dollars poured into it every blessed year by tobacco companies and pharmaceutical companies and poison manufacturers and, you know, the defense industry, on and on and on. And so they say things like, the war to advance economic liberty will last forever. The effort is frustrating and often discouraging. Many freedom fighters burn out, retire from the field, become disillusioned, even cynical. Most people grow tired when their efforts are demonized, attacked, and ignored. We're all human, and we can only do so much. But one individual never retreated, never retired from the war of ideas. The war to advance individual and economic liberty. A great advocate of liberty, Milton Friedman, died today at 94. To the end, his attention remained focused on seeking ways to clarify the value and virtues of liberty. All of this is so much garbage. Milton Friedman made a career out of the blood and bones and sweat and toil and of working people. Working people whom he would gladly have spit on each and every one had God but afforded him the opportunity and the time to do so, not to mention the spit. But of course, the Competitive Enterprise Institute is nothing but a mouthpiece for a bunch of corporate thugs who don't care about working people. You know, Milton Friedman said that if you had a job that paid you substandard wages and you lost a couple of fingers in the press every now and then at work, that was no big deal, because you were, by God, free, and you were a participant in the free market. And he hated unions. Lord God, Billy Bob, he hated unions. Given an opportunity, Milton Friedman would have peed all over the grave of Samuel Gompers, John L. Lewis, Walter Reuther. Milton Friedman was a sleazy pig. And like I said, hell is one soul heavier today. And they talk about him. And they talk about him being demonized. He wasn't demonized. He was a demon in his own right. Oh, Bob, you shouldn't say anything ill of the dead. Horse feathers. He contributed to the deaths of thousands, if not millions, of underpaid workers with his poppycock theories of the free market. Libertarian's darling. He loathed anything any theory that suggested that government was actually of the people, by the people, and for the people. The idea that we are sovereigns of this government was sickening to Milton Friedman. The idea that the government should be an agent of positive change in the lives of working people and the lower classes and the middle classes was absolute anathema to Milton Friedman, and he built a lifetime on nothing but hate. And so, please pardon me if in regard to the passing of Milton Friedman, I say good riddance to bad rubbish. And that's enough of that. Meanwhile, do you ever have the need to rent a car? you know, you get at you're in some new different. You had to fly to some other city, and you need to rent a car. Well, there was an initial public offering on Wall Street. Hertz Rent-A-Car went public. Hertz Rent-A-Car went public, having been purchased about, 6-9 months ago by a consortium of investors led by, drumroll please, the Carlyle Group. So if you are socially conscious, if you have a shred of morality about you, if you have a shred of common regard for your fellow man, you will never get within a country mile of the Hertz Rent-A-Car counter. Because every Hertz Rent-A-Car now comes with the invisible souls of about 3,000 dead Americans and 650,000 dead Iraqis with every rental. And, you know, when they want you to turn left and you're turning right, it's just not a pretty picture. You know, and you get it whether you're renting a Lincoln or a Cadillac from the best all the way down to the least automobile. Every automobile you rent from Hertz comes with Iraqi dead and American dead. Oh, and by the way, the Carlyle Group and its other members of its little buyout consortium paid themselves a handsome several billion dollars before the initial public offering. And by the way, it was supposed to be this big ballyhooed public offering, but it didn't come in quite as well as expected. But please remember, I mean, you know, I don't, you know, go to Walmart, don't go to Walmart. It's your call. Your morals are your business. But you do have the opportunity of at least having the information before you with which to make decisions when you do participate in Milton Friedman's free market. And as for me playing about in the free market, it'll be a cold day in hell. And maybe Milton Friedman will get a little bit of a break before I ever rent anything from Hertz. If Hertz Rent-A-Car went belly up tomorrow and just bled the Carlyle Group pale with debt, it would not grieve me in the least. I feel sorry for the people who work for Hertz, who now officially work for Jim Baker and George H.W. Bush and the Saudi royal family, and John Major, and all the swinish murderers of humanity that make up the board and the ownership of the Carlyle Group. So, you know, just a word to the wise is sufficient. You know, it's not like we're dealing here with Flush Flimball's ditto heads. You guys know what's right and what's wrong, and you will act accordingly. Tell you what, let's take a break, and then we'll come back to the phones. Your calls are welcome, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
What do you want?
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Woo-hoo. Woo-hoo. recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, 1/3 of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I, thank you.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
And we return 22 minutes, coming up on 23 minutes after the hour. Hope your evening is going, or your afternoon, or your tomorrow is going as well as mine has today. Let's go immediately across the pond, just to let you know. International calls we do tend to kick to the front of the lines, simply because the tolls are so much higher. And we are joined by our good friend Robert in Japan. Robert, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. A little bit chilly today, but not so bad.
And no tidal, no tsunami yesterday, so, you know, that more the better.
That's almost on the other side of the country there.
Right.
Over in Hokkaido, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's always nice. Yeah, your talk about Milton Friedman kind of sparked an interest in me.
I have a mean streak. I can't help it, Robert.
Well, I understand it, yeah. A little story here that kind of ties into this.
Okay.
My wife's sister came from the Philippines to visit for about, about 6 weeks. And it was very interesting to see how the third world meets the first world, because she had never taken a plane. She had never, you know, seen the life of the first world at all. And so I picked her up at the airport. It was her first plane trip, and kind of excited, pulling out of the airport and over in Fukuoka. And she kind of looks in amazement. She says, where are the squatters? You know, the people living under tents or
right.
cardboard boxes and stuff like that.
Under the bridge.
Yeah. It's tens of thousands of people, you know. Not just thousands, not hundreds, but tens of thousands, huddling next to garbage cans, eating themselves and stuff like that. And so she was amazed that there was a country that didn't have this, because in the Philippines, it's laissez-faire capitalism. It's pretty much what Milton Friedman would have desired and loved.
And the pathetic poor are de rigueur.
Yeah, and so it was almost as if I realized is that the squatters were something that was part of it, was a normality. I mean, it's like you have to have squatters here. It's like, where's the grass? There was as common as the sky. And so if squatters are common, if it's something that every country should have, it's not seen as a wrong. It's not something that should be a problem.
No, it's a norm.
It's a norm, yeah. And so you don't have to worry about it.
You know, you do just like Jesus, and you say, well, the poor you have always with you, and you move along.
Yeah, right. So I realize, I mean, with that attitude, you don't go around trying to fix it. And that's how Republicans really act. I mean, they look, take the deficit, They don't see the problem. They don't see that deficit, which is as high as the moon. They don't see the 25% poverty and, with children,
No, and they think that because the Dow is up above 12,000 that everybody's having pie and ice cream three meals a day.
Yes. I mean, they don't see all those dead soldiers coming back from Iraq. In fact, they go out of their way to make sure they hide it. But, it's almost like a blindness. And so, to get back to, my wife's sister, I mean, there was a lot that I didn't realize that she didn't know. So one day we brought home some asparagus. And she holds it up and she says to my wife, I think maybe in Pangasinan or Tagalog, she says, "What is this?" She had never seen asparagus before. Because, if you think about it, asparagus is kind of a rich man's vegetable. I mean, not going to see it. One time we brought home some olives. She holds up, "What are olives?" Because again, olives is, no olive company is going to, truck a bunch of olives out to the, a poor region in the Philippines to mix with their martinis, right?
Yeah. And, the golf and tennis clubs are kind of few and far between, probably.
Yeah.
On the outskirts of Luzon.
It went after, vegetable after vegetable, persimmon, you name it. And I realized how much she just didn't know because of how the poverty locks her in to just a certain limited range of vegetables, a certain range of meats, and that's it. I mean, she wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning to start doing her wash on a washboard, no washing machine.
Oh God!
And it becomes a psychological thing too. I mean, she has five children. Because the Pope says you must breed, and the men, they conservative men in the Philippines. Now they're all conservative. It's the macho culture. They believe that they just have to keep the woman as pregnant as possible. And so, she's been tied down with five children. And even though we help her, and then she has another child. So all that extra money goes into.
And if they're devout, of course, there can't be any birth control. There can't be any contraceptives. And in fact, there can't be any effort not to have kids.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't used to be like this. I mean, under Marcos, strangely enough, there was a lot of birth control was actually pushed. And as my wife was telling me all about, Cory Aquino, it was kind of, she was not really the person in charge. It was Ramos that was running the show the entire time.
Just as she had been the right hand to her husband before he was assassinated.
Right. And the thing about it is that she was one of the richest landowners in the Philippines. I saw part of her hacienda, and it's just, as far as the horizon goes. So, the rich are not going to do major land reform. I mean, I've driven with my brother-in-law along, these huge rice fields, and he would just point, that belongs to a congressman, that belongs to a congressman. And the poor are on top of the ridge, living in bamboo-thatched little huts, cooking over tiny little fires that, getting whatever food they can get.
And they're so poor and they're so desperate that revolution is even out of their reach.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even in their mind because they're just trying to survive. So, I mean, that's the reality. When I looked at Cory Aquino, and the first thing she got rid of was birth control. And so poverty just mushroomed under her control. And then, of course, she wasn't going to do any real land reform. So nothing has happened ever since. But unfortunately, democracy does become a vehicle for the rich. I mean, the rich run the show. until you base it on a politician is elected based on his socioeconomic status, and he reflects those people that are from that socioeconomic status. Unless he's shared the pain of those people, he's not going to do anything for those people.
No, and unless he is a profoundly enlightened individual, Rob.
Yeah, yeah, which is very rare. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but
well, you know, I mean, one of the reasons the United the Republicans in the United States so thoroughly despise, loathe, detest, and hate Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is he instituted meaningful land reform.
Right.
There, you know, millions upon millions of acres laying idle in Venezuela that could support peasant farmers.
Hmm.
And he began a redistribution of that land. If you're not using it, we're taking it and we're giving it to somebody who will.
Right.
And it, you know, that's part of a line of thinking that makes perfect sense to me, Robert, but apparently doesn't to a whole lot of people. You know, we talk here in the United States, mid-90s, you know, and Bill Clinton was part of it. We're going to have welfare reform. And so now we've got, and you know, it's 10 years old now, and we know that it's done nothing but create havoc and hell and agony for the poorest of the poor in the United States. The welfare to work program is an utter and abject failure. And what I don't get out of it is, if we take some of the wealth of this country and we give a check to poor people, you know, not food stamps, you know, not WIC, but you know, an outright welfare check. You know what those poor people do? Poor people generally are not very good investors, so they're not going to sock it away in some mutual fund. They're going to go out and buy a TV.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to take care of some needs, basically.
Yeah, and they're going to go out and they're going to turn around and pump that money right back into the economy. And so basically, you're making the money work twice, as opposed to eliminating welfare and giving tax cuts to people who have portfolios full of Dow Jones stock ticker abbreviations and buy into public offerings with the Carlyle Group for the Hertz Corporation. That money works once and then it never works again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the one thing about conservatives is that they're essentially very lazy, lazy people. Definitely coming up with new ideas to solve problems. I don't think I've seen one creative solution dealing with poverty from a conservative.
Well, look at Milton Friedman, Robert.
Yeah.
Milton Friedman is a perfect 94-year-long example of conservative laziness. He says, "Well, you know, it's just laissez-faire market economics." But what that's a bunch of fancy hogwash that he tied up with a bunch of charts and bar graphs and 8x10 color glossy photos with the photos and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one that says, "Leave it alone, don't do anything, be lazy, lay back and get rich."
Yep.
But the thing is, he's the one laying back, and he never thinks about the people in the sweatshops and the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire was an amusing anecdote to him.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, I'm extrapolating, but
yeah.
You know, any workplace regulations for safety, workplace regulations for health, you know, to the same extent that coal miners here in Appalachia suffer from black lung, and the people who dug and drilled out and blasted the Hawk's Nest Tunnel 7 miles away from me here died in the thousands of something called silicosis or occupational pneumoconiosis, white lung. Well, you know, the people working in the textile mills of New England and then into the Deep South when they started doing the union busting, they die of something called brown lung. And it has to do with breathing textile fibers into their lungs day in and day out. And Milton Friedman said, screw them. If the free market wants them to have workplace safety, the free market will provide workplace safety. Of course, the idea of the free market to Milton Friedman became something approaching that of a deity.
Yeah, yeah.
That it had some level of prescience. But the fact of the matter is, absent regulation, absent workers' comp, absent safety regulations, the free market will never want safety. Because there will always be more poor workers than there are dead workers.
Well, I mean, the two things that go is, you know, safety and conservation. Because even conservation means you have to cut back and produce a little bit less, you know, because you got to conserve energy or conserve water. So free enterprise is going to be at war with, you know, these two things. Definitely conservation in the years ahead of us. But
You know, and the laws of supply and demand dictate that there will always be more workforce than there are people working. So that means that absent some sort of unionization, some sort of organization, that working people can never get a break in a laissez-faire free market economy.
Well, I mean, I did like the system in Israel where you did have a system of kibbutzes, you know, be it hotels, be it factories, be it you know, whatever. And which, if you just couldn't make it, you could always join a kibbutz, and you could, you know, you work, I don't know, 10 hours a day, and you had all your needs taken care of and a place to live.
Well, and that has, I mean, there are aspects of that that are communistic and socialistic.
Yeah.
And
I
that
mean,
is.
I mean, it was quite interesting to see the manager of the factory actually doing his turn and doing the dishes, because, you know, dishes, nobody wanted to do dishes, so everyone took a free turn at doing the dishes.
I think everybody should.
Yeah.
I think Enron might not have collapsed if Ken Lay had gone down and actually swept a few floors once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very good experience because it puts you into, you know, reality of what your whole world is at. So, but I don't understand. I mean, Israel can do the kibbutz system, but America cannot. We're just, you know, what's the problem? I mean,
well, you know, I'm sure you're aware we've had our commune movements and our utopias.
Yeah.
But those always fall apart because there are personalities involved.
Mm.
And almost all the commune organizations that have sprung up, all the utopian societies, have sprung up around a person who had the original idea, whereas the idea of the kibbutz is much more organic, I think.
Mm.
And there are many of them at the same time, and they are not, by definition, cults of personality.
Right.
You know, on the other hand, you get some Boston Brahmin who decides to go off to the wilds of Ohio with a bunch of people following him. If that man's feet turn out to be made of clay, or someone gets a little ambitious, next thing you know, your utopia splits wide open because it's personality based and not common good based.
Mm.
And, I mean, frankly, on a larger scale, it's the same thing with totalitarianism, the kind of totalitarianism that passes itself off as communism, whether it be North Korea or Stalinist Russia. They all become eventually cults of personality. The clearest example of that is Mao.
Yeah. Well, there's just a lot of ideas that could be tried that I think, you know, I mean, having been around the world a bit, that could be tried and tried again. Other than just sitting back and doing nothing. It just seems like the conservatives are just so content with the way things are.
The way things are never touch the conservatives. The true laissez-faire conservatives, I'm not talking about their little culture warriors and their little shock troops, the idiots that don't have sense enough to vote their own pocketbooks and their economic interests. Now I'm talking about the Milton Friedmans and the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and you know, the hardcore libertarians and all that. They generally have enough money that real world issues don't touch them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they never make choices between groceries and gasoline.
Mm. Well, to get back to my wife's sister, I think when she actually went home last week, I said, "You're going back with your eyes open now. You will now see the poverty that you never saw before." And she, you know, she wrote, she, you know, texted us back, and she says, "Yeah, she sees things now differently." I just wish other people would too. I mean, the poverty there is just mind-boggling. You try to survive on $60 a month because that's what the market gives you. Health care, well, there's no universal health care at all except for the very, very rich. And you're living in huts and tents and tarps because that's what the market recommends.
Can you imagine what the rainy season must be in this? My God.
Oh, it just blew my mind when I went back in September because I saw all these people living under tarps and it's raining all the time. It just blew me away.
And, you know, that's not just the Philippines, that's Malaysia, that's Indonesia.
Oh, well, how many billions of people live like that? And you include Africa?
Yeah.
A lot of people in South America.
You know,
I mean, when she was telling me about, hey, I don't know this vegetable, I don't know that, and I don't know this, and she just looks in amazement in Japan, I could see how a lot, the huge gap between how we live and how they live really is. I mean, I've been there four times, but still, you know, just...
Well, it certainly puts real meaning on the bumper sticker phrase of live simply that others may simply live, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. True. Very true.
I mean, that's not just a slogan. That is, you know, for someone who lives in a land of relative plenty, such as you and I do, it's a moral imperative.
Mm.
If you can do without something that means someone else can do with it, then it is almost morally upon you to do so, isn't it?
Right. Right.
I've got a dear old friend down in the southern part of this state who's one of whose favorite phrases is, "I'd rather die owing you than beat you out of it."
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And there's an element of truth in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the poverty becomes very much of a not only just a social thing, but a psychological thing and a mental thing, an emotional thing, and sometimes you get to the point where you don't think you can change it. So, I mean, that was what I also saw in her as well.
Well, but I'm a firm believer in the ripples in the pond school of thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily have to know which part of the bank the ripple of the pebble that I toss is going to touch. But I do know that my actions do, the little pebble that I am does make ripples.
Mm. And well, at least she went back with her eyes open. So
right.
That's a small achievement, I think.
And I think whether you give it a lot of thought or not, she went back with her eyes open, and it's very obvious to me from the tenor of this conversation, Robert, she opened yours.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So you know, there is reciprocity, and I think that's what the conservatives miss out on. It's not all about them. This is not an earth that was created for them. This isn't their little playground, and they are not some sort of Calvinist blessed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just wanted to just bring that story to you.
Well, I thank you, Robert. I thank you very sincerely, and I love our conversations.
Yes, well, I always enjoy yours, of course.
And a very good day to you.
Okay, take care.
Take care, you too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And on to our good friend David calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine, and I'm gonna mention a movie for you guys to check out, but also I want to talk about Glenn Beck's comments today.
Well, I'll tell you what, if that's the case, then let's set the stage.
Okay.
I've got Glenn Beck's comment here, and that's not it. I'm talking to Agnes. We need the desktop.
Well, then let's make this about Glenn Beck's comment.
Yeah, stand by just a second. We've got.
All right.
Just one on the on, you got it.
Yes.
Okay. So what happened is yesterday. What is the gentleman's name? He's been elected to Congress from Minnesota, Ellison.
Ellison, right?
Yes. Soon to be Congressman Ellison, an African American, the first Muslim who to ever take a seat in the Congress in either house. He's been elected from the 5th Congressional District of Minnesota.
Right.
And for reasons known but to God, he shows up on Glenn Beck's program. Glenn Beck, who is about as sleazy a right-wing thug as has ever gotten behind a microphone, who now has a TV show on Headline News. And by way of introduction, Glenn Beck says to soon-to-be Congressman Ellison the following.
History was made last Tuesday when Democrat Keith Ellison got elected to Congress representing the great state of Minnesota. Well, not really unusual that Minnesota would elect a Democrat. What is noteworthy is that Keith is the first Muslim in history to be elected to the House of Representatives. He joins us now. Congratulations, sir.
How you doing, Glenn? Glad to be here.
Thank you. I will tell you, may we have 5 minutes here where we're just politically incorrect and I play the cards face up on the table?
Go there.
Okay. No offense, and I know Muslims. I like Muslims. I've been to mosques.
Some
I really don't believe that Islam is a religion of evil. I think it's being hijacked, quite frankly. Let me, with that being said, you are a Democrat. You are saying, let's cut and run. And I have to tell you, I have been nervous about this interview with you because what I feel like saying is, sir, prove to me that you are not working with our enemies.
Well, isn't that charming?
You know, Bob, one thing that I want to make point of it, and I think a lot of more people on the progressive side should make point of it, is when you bring a military into a place like Iraq and you attack an army, what does the army do after they kill a few? They run. They cut and run. Okay, they're not cutting and run. They're shooting and running. So, you know, I think there is a big disconnect on what really happens in a war. Because, and you know, the problem with Glenn Beck is that he lives in these talking points world. And I believe, I'm probably one of the only ones listening to this show right now, but I believe Glenn, he's just doing business for business sake, talking points for talking points sake. I believe he probably is a good family person and all of this. And I remember listening to him on the radio, and he had this dilemma in his head what he was saying. He says, sometimes I wonder what I'm saying, if it's morally right to say this, because this is what I think. And when I was listening to the radio show, I understood what he was saying. And it's like a moment of, you know, of revealing himself just for a second. And I think what happens is they just shun themselves away from that again, and they go right back into corporate conservative mode.
Well, see, you're a little more charitable toward Glenn Beck than I am.
Well, I think it's just a caricature. I really do. And I think when he gets the talking points and he sees, you say Muslims are, this is what we know about Muslims, this is what I know about America, this is what I was told. I think so many people, they can't wake up in a reality like you or I where there is no gray areas. They hate that. They can't. You know, and this reminds me also of, on Crooks and Liars, of another person, Pamela at Atlas Shrugged. I don't know if you heard about this, Bob. But this girl, after, this is another example of the culture that they are creating. This girl, this woman, who has children, by the way, she is a fan of Ayn Rand and a fan of John Bolton. She had a John Bolton interview. Well, on her blog, she created quite a bit of controversy on the web because she actually said, maybe we should bomb the diplomats, the American diplomats. Now, here's my problem with that. That is a clear violation of the Patriot Act right there.
Well, so was what Chad Castagana did, sending the envelopes of white powder
exactly.
to Olbermann and the Schumer and Letterman and the rest of them.
What was his punishment anyway?
Well, he's been arrested, but he certainly hasn't been named an enemy combatant, as he should certainly be. I mean, if we're gonna play by these rules, by God, the rules have to apply uniformly. They have to apply to American conservative terrorists as well as the terrorists from another country.
The question is do you really want to get into that political atmosphere?
No, I don't want that law to exist. I think it's
right.
A bogus law. I think that the real test and the fact is that, you know, again, this is so-called the failure or the fraud of so-called free market economics. If you put Glenn Beck and his bigotry and his racism and his hate and his
right.
abject ignorance into an open free marketplace of ideas, he will sink like a stone. Okay? Unfortunately, however, the market is rigged. The market is not free. The marketplace of ideas is largely ghettoized because Glenn Beck is part and parcel of Clear Channel, who interestingly was sold today. And Clear Channel has a monopoly on the marketplace of ideas. If Clear Channel doesn't say it, most of the country doesn't hear it.
You know what I don't get? Is headline news becoming like Fox News now or something? Why is Glenn Beck still on there? Because I don't think his ratings are doing that well.
Because he signed a contract for X number of months or X number
right.
or a year or whatever, and they will stand in there with him until he burnt and until the contract's gone, and then they'll
the
move
funny
on.
Thing. But here's the funny thing. Donahue was let go as soon as he made a edgy remark about the war in Iraq. Why isn't Glenn Beck... This is what I don't understand. Why isn't Glenn Beck held to that same standard?
Because racism is okay in America, David. And I'm not being mean to you. I understand you're up there in Maine, and you're in a different world, my friend. But racism is okay in the heartland, because that's how Glenn Beck prefaced that little screed, that little mouthful of hate that he vomited out onto the national airwaves last night or night before. He said, I'm just saying something that I think the rest of the country is thinking. It is the biggest intellectual cop-out that you can humanly imagine. In other words, it's his idea, but he's foisting it off on a bunch of imaginary people. And then he plays the oldest, the racist piece of racist code in American parlance. How many? God knows, I heard it. I'm not prejudiced against black people. Some of my best friends are black. I work with black people.
I doubt that guy goes to mosques. I really do.
Yeah, if he's ever been in a mosque.
If he's ever been in a mosque, then Hank Williams is going to write Hank Williams Jr. is going to write an album about Islam.
Yeah, or convert.
Yeah, or Toby Keith. Toby Keith's going to become a Muslim.
Yeah. That's about the same likelihood. But, see, this is not shtick, okay?
Oh, yeah, I know.
That might be his fallback position. You know, just like Flush Flimball, every time he gets caught telling, for instance, an African-American caller to call me back when you get the bone out of your nose, he says, well, my friends, I am only an entertainer.
I really do think Glenn Beck is going to lose his show, by the way.
Yeah, but he'll be back.
He's going to get cut, just like Rush Limbaugh's show.
Yeah, but he's still a millionaire. He's still out there competing on an unlevel playing field. He's still out there pretending that his the being part of a fraud that says his ideas have value, when in fact the marketplace is not open for the for all of the ideas to compete. You know, I don't know who it is that watches Glenn Beck. I mean, I 2 o'clock in the morning, and me with half a face on a Friday night. You know, I'll be clicking by, and I'll stop. It was like watching a slow moving train wreck the other night. I saw Danny Bonaducci on there, and I went, "Holy crap!"
Well, you know what's interesting? Even Air America has submitted to the Glenn Beck Agenda Exposed. they took his advertising money, which is kind of funny if you think about it, because would a conservative radio station take CNN's Wolf Blitzer, the Situation Room's money? No, I don't think so. For advertisements, they wouldn't. Because
they're ideologues.
It's a different ideology. We have more tolerance than they do. But something in me automatically goes, yeah, but you're actually having these ads, and somebody up on Sam's Theater tonight, and I was like, you know, it's a good point. And after a while, how many ads are you going to place on there that are going to be against what we believe? That's the ultimate struggle, Bob.
Well, it really is. And it goes to the heart of how we want to fight this battle. And you cannot. There are people on our side of the debate, David, that want to fight this thing fair and square. You know, I see it every day on the blogs when I'm wandering around. If somebody gets a little bit nasty with the repigs like I am wont to do, what you get back in return is, well, we don't want to be like they are. Nah, sucker, you want to keep losing's what you want to do.
You know, Bob, I keep bringing up this analogy, but I really do think that I believe that we need to be more like a mafia code for the progressives, of a family that sticks together. And yeah, you are going to have some people that are going to be strays and black dogs of family, but you can't allow that to stop you and change who you are as people. You have to continue on with what it is you do in your daily life. And whatever they do, if they demonize you, which brings me to I sent you an email on the new Tom Tomorrow commercial.
Yeah, I saw it. I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet.
Yeah, wait till you see it. You want to put it up on your site.
Okay.
It's really funny. But, you know, we just have to keep on trekking on, and that's really that's really where we're at right now. And I think in January we have to continue saying that this war is not the way to go through, and we just have to keep going in that direction, no matter what.
Well, yeah, and you've got to, but the other side of that, David, is that we also have to understand how to deal with bullies. You know,
yeah, then that's what I'm saying. You have to understand about with bullies, and that's why you have to have, like, almost, you have to be on that line, Bob. You have to be on that line where you're going to be aggressive. And, yeah, you're going to have some people who are going to step over that line, and they're going to be seen as lunatics. But guess what? You have to be on that line to put people in place.
Well, you know, I find it so humorous when I think back to the bad old days of terrestrial radio in Beckley. I used to say, you're full of hate. Yeah, and all I was doing was pointing out the pure and simple facts about Republican policies.
You're a name caller.
You know, but the fact of the matter is, I wasn't doing anything that they hadn't done. And I wasn't preaching race hate along with it. And I wasn't preaching a war along with it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And they get a pass. Because
steps out of that line of morality on their side, like the weathermen, when they bombed those locations,
yeah.
Say, that's it, you're out. I don't agree with that. No. You have to be immediately responding to something like that. And that's something that the right doesn't do.
No.
They just let it go on and on and on.
You're out there just like I am. How many denunciations have you seen of Chad Castagana on the right?
I don't, you know what? That's an interesting thing. I probably see about 30 to 40% of the people that say, you know what, if he did that. See, the thing is they're in denial. They refuse to believe that a conservative is like that because they've been sold that.
But, dear God, of course they're like that. Timothy McVeigh was not some liberal. David Koresh was not a liberal.
Well, you got to understand, Bob, that most of them believe in this moderate conservative. I don't know, Bob, it's insane. They believe in this moderate conservative illusion. It's like, what the hell is a moderate conservative? And they can't tell you. Nobody can tell you. They'll just say, well, this is what I believe in. And I'm like,
well,
I get
I get what you're saying. I don't know. I think of Republicans and conservatives the same way I think of a McRib sandwich. Okay, it ain't real.
The way I think is I don't like to be typecast. I just have a line of morality, and this is what I believe, and this is what I don't believe. And the minute you say, Bob, this is the thing I can't stand. When we talk about torture, look at the definition of torture. All it means is pain and anguish. How can you be that stupid to think it means severed limbs?
Organ failure or death.
Yeah, organs, your intestines pulled out. It doesn't mean any of that.
No, when Alberto Gonzalez said that torture means organ failure or death, you know, he was into that kind of intellectual footsie that first-year law students play.
Bob, you want to know something funny? Rumsfeld, technically, was causing us all torture.
Well,
he should be thrown in detainment camp for causing us all torture. He was bringing anguish on us. He was bringing anguish on the soldiers.
Yeah.
Just by what he was saying on a microphone, not his policies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you look at it and apply something as unintrusive as common sense, then things become abundantly clear, don't they?
They certainly do, Bob.
And, you know, I, like I said, and I think you agree, you treat bullies like, you know, you apply the golden rule to bullies. And you do unto bullies as bullies do unto you. And that's how you make them stop being bullies. A couple of days ago, hearing Newt Gingrich come out and say, oh, we need a civility of discourse now. You know, it was another one of those, you know, boy, go get me the Elvis gun and a peanut butter and banana sandwich. Daddy's shooting the TV again. It's every day now.
You know, Rumsfeld is never going to back down. And I swear to God, I hope they keep continuing pressing on these war crime trials in Germany. If they back down and they do this, this is just another example that you just fell right into that trap once more. You're going to let that wrestler, that poser, that person who says, I'm always right, you're going to let him win like that. Don't do it. That's all
right.
I have to say.
Well, I agree. And we got a roll, David, but good to hear from you. And thanks for everything.
All right, Bob. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Have a good night.
Later.
Bye now. About 2 minutes before the hour. Jump right in. The conversation's fine. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you're feeling in a typing fingers kind of mood, bob@headonradio.com. Hell, give me a minute. I'll get out on the porch and you can do semaphores. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
Stay tuned for Quality News Network at the time.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill today, House Democrats picked their leadership positions for the 110th Congress. In an upset for the number two job, the hand-picked choice of soon-to-be Speaker Nancy Pelosi was defeated. Maryland Representative Steny Hoyer beat Pennsylvania Representative John Murtha to become the next majority leader. Pelosi herself was unanimously selected to be the next Speaker of the House when the next Congress convenes in January. More than a week after the congressional midterm elections, there are still seven House races that are undecided. Five of them are too close to call, and two others will be decided in runoff contests next month. In Baghdad, an arrest warrant was issued today by the Iraqi Interior Ministry for the head of the Sunni Association of Muslim Scholars. The leader of the influential group is wanted for inciting terrorism and violence in Iraq. However, some fear this will increase the sectarian violence in the country. Also in Baghdad, as many as 80 kidnapped victims are still in captivity, according to Iraq's higher education minister. The 70 who were released had been badly tortured. They were all taken from a downtown Baghdad government building in a brazen kidnapping by armed gunmen on Tuesday. The U.S. military reports four more U.S. soldiers were killed in combat missions in Iraq. That brings the American military death toll to at least 44 so far this month. President Bush is in Singapore as part of his Asian trip to shore up American allies. The president gave a speech in which he called for a rejection of any tendency toward isolationism. Pakistan said today that it successfully test-fired a new version of a medium-range nuclear missile. As part of a UN resolution passed last month, French officials are inspecting the cargo aboard a North Korean ship in the Indian Ocean. They are looking for any nuclear material. Republican Senator John McCain has filed paperwork today to form a presidential exploratory committee for the 2008 race. Former Wisconsin Governor and Bush Cabinet Secretary Tommy Thompson also said he's planning to form a committee to seek the 2008 Republican presidential nomination. Nobel Prize-winning free market economist Milton Friedman has died. He was 94 years old. Friedman wrote more than a dozen books in which he championed individual, political, and economic freedom. And today marks the 30th anniversary of the Cancer Society's Great American Smokeout, a day for smokers to try and quit. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Researchers have found that happiness has a strengthening effect on the immune system and that people with happy dispositions tend to suffer less when they do get colds. Walmart plans to have its $4 offer for a month's supply of generic prescription drugs available in all 50 states by January. The Los Angeles City Attorney's Office has filed criminal and civil charges against Kaiser Permanente Hospital for allegedly dumping homeless patients on Skid Row. In Nashville, the nation's largest for-profit hospital chain, HCA, will go private. Shareholders approved the $21 billion leveraged buyout. The biggest radio station owner in America, Clear Channel, will be acquired by an investment group for nearly $19 billion. The buyers will also assume $8 billion of the company's debt. The Securities and Exchange Commission is looking into Dell's accounting. The computer company delayed its quarterly earnings report as a result. Across the country, customers are lining up at stores such as Best Buy and Walmart ahead of tomorrow. tomorrow's release of the Sony PlayStation 3 video game console. Rival Nintendo's Wii will go on sale on Sunday. Light sweet crude is trading at $56.10 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow had another record close for the third day. The Dow was up 54 points at 12,305. NASDAQ up 6. S&P 500 up 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
30 minutes to kick off in the backyard brawl, and I'm beginning to quiver. And speaking of quivering, it is a long, long article, but worth your effort. I believe it's available over at Alternet. Go and read the story of the fundamentalist breeding for Jesus. It's a... Agnes, don't look at me like that.
Breeding for Jesus.
Breeding for Jesus. Yeah, it's a movement called Quiverful. And it comes from some verse in Psalms or something that says, Lo, yea, verily, and forsooth, amen, hallelujah, heck! Like unto a quiver full of arrows are the righteous young sons of a godly man. Really.
Oh, God.
And so these people have decided, I mean, and they're mainly like the homeschooling bazaar people. You know, they've got their little textbooks that say all the dinosaur bones are 2,000 years old, and what they are, well. Dinosaurs, like unicorns, were the unfaithful animals that refused to heed the godly call of goodly Noah when he issued out the call for the aminals to come two by two and mount up the ramp and ride the billowing waves when the earth was covered in water to wash away the sins of evil mankind. That's what the dinosaurs are about. Yeah. So, you know, you kind of get the idea. They're having kids at, I mean, these are women who absolutely refuse, they reject any idea of feminism. They reject any idea of their right to be a first class human being citizen. They reject the idea that they are equal to a man.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bull action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
And what they've got this almost eugenic, this Hitlerian eugenic notion that they're going to outbreed the heathens. So they're having families of 10, and I mean, there was, I think there's one woman referenced who's on her 12th kid. Quit looking like you've been kicked there, Agnes. I really shouldn't do these stories in front of her, considering how badly she feels right now. Go read this thing, though. I imagine if you just Google Quiverful. But you know, there's several thousand of these families scattered over the fruited plain, and they aim to outbreed us heathens, so that they can breed an army of God to come and, you know, slaughter the unbelievers. Whew. You know, I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried to. And you know, I haven't let go yet of the Glenn Beck thing. Because this is all part of it, it's part of a piece. You know, Glenn Beck, I've seen a couple of blathers on him where he talks about how, you know, 30 years in radio and how, you know, he lived the life of Riley and he was a real hedonist and he was a party animal. Come on, look at this creep. Can you imagine partying with Glenn Beck? No. no more than you can imagine. Yeah, these people, these aren't party people. Party with flush Flimball. You know, these are the kind of people who sit by themselves in front of the blue glow of a television screen and eat Oxycontin like M&Ms and think they're having a high old time. Because they're not really fit for human company. A listener, our friend George, writes in to share. Apparently, George caught Glenn Beck on the Coast to Coast AM show hosted by George Norrie, the old Art Bell show. And you know, when you're out in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, driving along in the middle of nowhere, nothing but a darkened expanse of asphalt in front of you, Art Bell was your friend. Because you knew it wasn't going to be long after the buy gold or buy my vacuum cleaner ad that you'd have somebody call in to say that, Art, the aliens are landing. Oh, the probe's going in. And it would, you know, it would keep you awake. It was better at keeping you awake than Truckin' Bozo out of WLW, Cincinnati. But George caught Glenn Beck on the George Norrie program, and he fired off the following. This is a beauty. Dear George, I was listening to your show the other night when you had on as a guest conservative talk show host Glenn Beck. I must say I wasn't prepared to hear what I heard. What a gentleman you are to listen to this kook and let him rant on about the evils of Islam and the impending perils of Iran. He obviously is ignorant and or indifferent to America's role in Iran vis-a-vis the Shah and the misery that ensued. And you didn't challenge him once. Were you able to keep a straight face as this Looney Tune prattled away with his fear-mongering? Sweet Jesus, what a freak this man is! And what a patriot. I'm sure he's so concerned about the impending danger he talks about that he will almost certainly sign up soon for military service, just like all the other chicken hawks on the right. Hell, he's only 40 or so. Let him go over to the meat grinder and get his ass shot off. The military has set its standards so low now that they can't say no. I know a man of his convictions and beliefs won't hesitate to do all he physically can do to save us. Ha! What a disturbing, self-promoting, silly little man he is. All that's missing is the ridiculous mustache, the brown uniform, and the high boots. Signed, George. Yeah, that's Glenn Beck. And of course, this is all done to manipulate not people so much as their money. Because, frankly, and this is something I hope that one of these days we will get across to liberals. Keith Ellison appearing on Glenn Beck's program, and I'm going to play the clip for you again in a minute, just in case you missed it, or in case you didn't. I mean, this needs to be heard two or three times to really appreciate the full filthy quality of it. The racism, the fear-mongering, the utter bigotry. But we've got to get something across to our elected leaders. And that is, there is nothing to be gained by going into a forum that is absolutely controlled by the other side. Now, witness the fact that I repeatedly, and the other side's figured this out, by the way, the fact that I have tried repeatedly to get any goober, I don't care, the most low-rent, right-wing, family values goober from the American Family Association on this program, and you know what? They won't come. Because they know, like I said, in talking with David, they know that they cannot compete on a level playing field. They cannot compete in a real free market of ideas, where common sense and intelligence and thought give one side greater sway than the other. If for every 3 hours of Glenn Beck, you had to have, say, 3 hours of me. If for every 3 hours of the Savage Wiener, you had to have 3 hours of Guy James. If for every 3 hours of a fake intellectual like Neil Bortz, you had to have 3 hours of a real intellectual like Dr. Bill. If for every 3 hours of a life support system for a haircut like Sean Hannity job, you had to have 3 hours of real, live, honest-to-God legal analysis and exposition from the likes of Mark Levine. Right-wing talk would be coughing up blood on the doorstep by the next morning, because it cannot win where there is legitimate dialogue, debate, and discussion. Do you agree? I mean, if you listen to right-wing talk filth, do you ever feel like maybe you're just on the wrong side of things and you've got it all wrong and they've got it right? Do you ever have one of those moments? I don't. And it's not because I'm some sort of raving egomaniac. We have it right because we apply thought to it. They have it wrong because all they apply is fear to it. We look at an idea and or a concept or a story, and we try to look behind the spin, and we try to look behind the journalistic flummery and figure out what's really going on. The right-wing yammerheads look at a story and try to start figuring out how they can use a story to manipulate you. I am sure that as I speak, the savage wiener is just piddling all over himself, screaming out about an American soldier who raped, murdered, and set fire to the bodies of a girl and her family in Iraq, screaming that he's been done in by the liberals, or perhaps they've been done in, maybe that soldier's been done in by the gay mafia. And their big pink bulletproof Cadillacs. Agnes, fire up Glenn Beck again. I want to. This is the kind of stuff that you don't just let slide.
History was made last Tuesday when Democrat Keith Ellison got elected to Congress representing the great state of Minnesota.
Well, not really unusual that Minnesota would elect a Democrat. What is noteworthy is that Keith is the first Muslim in history to be elected to the House of Representatives. He joins us now. Congratulations, sir.
How you doing, Glenn? Glad to be here.
Thank you. I will tell you, may we have 5 minutes here where we're just politically incorrect and I play the cards face up on the table?
Go there.
Okay. No offense, and I know Muslims. I like Muslims. I've been to mosques. I really don't believe that Islam is a religion of evil.
Yes, he does. If he has been to a mosque, maybe it's like I've been to the Syria Mosque in Pittsburgh. It used to be a real mosque, but it got turned into a really cool place for rock shows and concerts and the like. I hear it's been torn down. It's a shame. Beautiful facility. But that, you know, but this is, you know, this is the setup that Glenn Beck uses. This is the setup that all the right-wingers use. I'm not really a bigot, but I'm going to say something bigoted. Okay. And of course, he is a bigot.
You know, I think it's being hijacked, quite frankly. Let me, with that being said, you are a Democrat. You are saying, let's cut and run.
Stop.
And
stop.
I have to tell
okay,
you.
Okay, no,
I
no,
have
wait,
been...
wait, stop. Maybe they had Keith Ellison's microphone turned off. Maybe Keith Ellison is just too nice of a guy that the minute he said, you're a Democrat, you're cut and run, because the first that you stop it, because I would do the same. Stop right there. But we need to get through to our Democratic leaders that we do not help these people sell anything anymore. Because when you appear on one of these programs, they promote your appearance, and you are helping to sell their crap. You don't go on these shows. Charlie Rangel, Henry Waxman, John Conyers, none of you go on Fox anymore. Because you are wasting the precious remaining moments of your life talking to people who would just as soon shoot you as hear you. And call you things like communist. We are wasting our time and we are hurting ourselves by participating in the unlevel playing field that is right-wing babble. It is just that simple, and someone needs to let Keith Ellison know. And I'm proud of Keith Ellison, by the way, because beyond the Beck business, you want to hear something that will make you proud? Dear Leader, before he flew off, you know, and as a young man, he went to the Texas Air National Guard to stay out of Vietnam. Now he's going to Vietnam to stay out of Washington, D.C. But he hosted a very Tony upscale reception for all the incoming freshman members of the House and Senate. Oh, dear me. I mean, there were little two-prongy forks for using with the lark's vomit canapes and the tiny little shrimp and the sea monkeys. And Keith Ellison said, screw this. And he went over to a working man's reception held by the AFL-CIO, and he said it was a no-brainer. There was no question that he was going to go and hang out and work with working people instead of hanging out with a sleaze bucket like George Bush. And I'm proud of him for that. Now we've just got to educate him enough to let him to help him understand that he does not help advance the right-wing cause by selling right-wing advertising by appearing on right-wing TV or radio. Okay, let's talk to Andy real quick, calling from England. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's things going?
I'm good, you?
Not too bad. Flash news.
Yes?
The BBC program Newsnight tonight did a special, and it's inside Al-Qaeda, a spy story, and it's an interview. Obviously, they've, you know, used an actor and a voice and a different name and things, but it's an interview with a guy who actually trained with and knows all the big names they keep spewing out of who are Al-Qaeda, you know? That guy you've got in custody, you knew him. What's his name? Qatada?
Khalif?
Sheikh Mohammed?
Kafari? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he knew all of those guys, you know what I mean? But it's a really interesting program, and everybody is free to watch it online, courtesy of, well, the license fee I pay.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you. We're glad you pay it, too.
Hmm?
We're very glad you pay it.
Well, you should be. It's free for you guys. You know, BBC America, funded by us.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the last places we can get any actual straight up information.
Well, yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, then they're still a little bit on the to the right of the center line, but you know, Tony Blair has this habit of firing people who don't give the thing he likes given out. But the website is, if you do www.bbc.co.uk. And then just put / in and put news, N-E-W-S, and then night, N-I-G-H-T, and hit go. Everyone should bookmark that, because that's a damn good site. I mean, the BBC is a good site.
And then the pieces are up for like 24 hours at a time?
Yeah, basically, the program's on GMT time, 10:30 till about 11:20. And that's every night, so yeah, I think Fridays will be on over the weekend. But they do, I think you can look at the older shows too, somewhere in the archive. But it's just on the right hand side, latest program, just click watch, it'll open up a real player or media player, whichever you prefer.
Okay, cool.
But, yeah, it was a really good one. I mean, I don't want to say much about it, because obviously I'd be wasting your time since you guys all need to get.
Yeah, no spoilers, please.
But yeah, I mean, you've all got 23 hours until it's taken down, so.
Okay.
So that's a site everyone should bookmark, and, you know, it's something, if you've got 50 minutes of a day you want to just watch something a bit different, then, you know, it's got a load of information. Sometimes it's kind of relevant to the world, sometimes it's more British orientated, but very often it's very interesting. And the main dude, Jeremy Paxman, Prime Minister John Major said he was the only interviewer where he thought he was going to get punched.
And deserve to be.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Paxton's one of these guys who's like, no, you're not answering my question. Answer my question. And leans forward on the table, fist goes down. You know, no, I didn't ask you that. I asked you. And then repeats the question. Now answer the question. And they get about four or five goes. If they just won't answer the question, he goes, right, I've had enough of this. Go away. Moves on to the next topic.
Yeah, congratulations, and we'll do another interview.
Yeah,
I was up way before I should have been a couple of days ago, and I caught the opening of the new parliament. expecting any good out of that?
Tony Blair's trying to institute a whole other bunch of laws that we don't need. I mean, here's what the deal is. In the 10 years Labour have been in power, we've had 3,000 new laws put on the book.
That's charming.
Trouble zero. 3,000, yeah. And, I mean, they, you know, range from being black in the wrong area and being Muslim in the wrong area all the way up to being white and walking down the wrong street at night. You know, whatever you like. Basically, the police can now do whatever they like to us. And, you know, obviously it's all because of terrorism.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I watched another show tonight called Question Time. One, and it basically always has a government minister and a member of the opposition and then another member of the other opposition or a bunch of journalists or whatever. And there's like sort of four people on the panel, five people on the panel. And the minister today, he's a Home Office minister, so of course they were talking about sort of, you know, Home Affairs and the you know, laws and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kept reiterating that nobody expected July the 7th, 7-7, nobody expected this. I'd like to point out that actually, on the day of July the 7th, when the bombs went off in the London Underground and on the bus, there was an exercise going on. This exercise was centered around four explosions, and all four sites were the same sites that the explosions actually happened at.
Really?
Yes. And the odds of this happening, okay, I don't know how to say the word for this number, but I can tell you how many numbers it has in it. It's a 1, 0, and an 8, followed by 41 zeros. And that's the odds. One in that of you holding a...
1.08 times 10 to the 41st.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's got a stupid name.
Oh, but like a Google, like Avogadro's number or something.
Well, it's one of those, not quite, but close. I mean, it's so. I mean, the guy that was running the exercise is phoned up in the middle of the exercise. Oh, it's actually happened. Quick, we need to use your exercise to actually run the counter, the response to the explosions. And he's just like, oh right. Well, it was such a surprise when that happened. He says in an interview, a surprise. Yeah. Okay.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I had not heard that. I mean,
well, everybody
knew the Air Force was stood down on 9/11.
Well, they were either stood down or they were sent to the top part of Canada for training exercises. Do you know how many exercise operations were being run on 9/11 inside the military?
Oh, a heap.
Yeah, like 70 or something. There were a load of virtual ones, there were a load of real ones. Some of them were about anti-terrorist actions. Some of them were about fighting a war with the Chinese. Some of them were about fighting a war with, like, the South Americans. You know, they basically overloaded your whole command net so that the people in the know could do what they wanted to do.
Right.
Where did all the gold go from below Building 7? Billions and billions of dollars of gold. I mean, if that story came out, the world economic market would collapse because that gold is no longer backing any of the money it's supposedly backing.
You know, and there's a new James Bond movie out.
Yeah.
This, you know, some of this stuff sounds like a James Bond movie.
Well, of course it does. Of course it does. But, I mean, that's part of the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're playing the big game. I mean, you've played poker, right?
Sure.
You bluff.
Oh, yeah.
You bluff out the big game. I mean, they're expecting people to go, no, it's too crazy. It's not too crazy. Not when there's money involved. Remember, Bob. Any amount of our money is worth spending in defense of any small amount of their money. And that's why things like the war in Iraq suddenly make sense. The war in Iraq makes no sense. We're losing money. Ah, but the only people that are losing money are the taxpayers of Britain and the United States and, of course, you know, any poor bugger that lives in Iraq. Everybody else, i.e. the ruling class of our countries, is making heaps of money.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you just look at the stock markets.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
I mean, this is all very good for them.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you know, well, I mean, just look at our news. What's the one thing you can guarantee you'll get every day, Bob? What's the one thing? You can sometimes get a bad story. You can sometimes get a good story. You can sometimes get one of those kitten stories that makes people feel warm and cuddly.
A little girl
day.
With an ice cream cone petting
well,
a squirrel.
Yeah, every damn day, you get the stock market results.
Yeah.
Every day. And that should tell you everything you need to know about our society.
Yeah, because hell or high water, we will keep those... Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's there's a reason that Milton Friedman is in hell.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to go now, but I'm going to leave you with one thing. I can prove to everybody that capitalism doesn't work, and I can do it in about 5 seconds. Okay, ready?
Okay.
Everybody in the world, pretty much, is capitalist. And most of the people in that world, the vast majority, are poor. There you go.
Enough said.
Bingo. Have a nice night, man.
Later, Andy.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will have on the line with us, God will, and the crick don't rise. I can name that song in two notes, Agnes. Susan Tolchin, she and her husband, Martin, have authored a book called A World Ignited. Particularly subtitled, How Apostles of Ethnic, Religious, and Racial Hatred Torched the Globe. It is out from Roman and Littlefield. We'll be talking to Susan Tolchin in just a moment. Stick around. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to WaterUseItWisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Thank you.
right, 25 minutes before the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And as promised, on the line with us is Susan Tolchin. She's a professor of public policy at George Mason University, also the author of another book, The Angry American, How Voter Rage is Changing the Nation. In this particular instance, however, this evening we are discussing the latest book from Professor Tolchin and her husband, Martin Tolchin, recently of the New York Times, a long career there, and founder of the Hill newspaper. This particular book from Roman and Littlefield is A World Ignited, How Apostles of Ethnic, Religious, and Racial Hatred Torched the Globe. Professor Tolchin, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Well, good to be with you.
I'm so glad to have you on board, because your book addresses something that we talk about quite frequently on this program, and that is the level of anguish and misery that is foisted not upon just this nation but upon this globe by extremists of many stripes. What was the genesis of the book?
Well, I had done a book in the 90s called The Angry American, which is about voter anger in this country, and we've seen a whole lot of it in this recent election where we changed parties and whatnot. But I was talking to the editor of that, and we were talking about another book. She said, now it's world anger. It's really spread all over the globe. The anger that we felt in America in the 90s is now world anger, and we're seeing that with the rise of fundamentalism and the collision and the rise of terrorism and, you know, the kind of anti-Semitism that's going on all over the world. And a lot of that anger is leveled at America.
And it seems like everybody's mad at somebody, doesn't it?
It does.
With that in mind, did you have a jumping off point? Did you start with Muslim fundamentalism or American fundamentalism?
Well, we have a chapter on just fundamentalism in general, and of course we concentrate on Muslim fundamentalism because that's the source of a lot of the anger. The terrorist bombings, 9/11, came from the kind of Muslim fundamentalism, and so we discuss. We discuss fundamentalism really from the point of view of mostly the Muslims, and then we bring in the two other Abrahamic religions, Judaism and Christianity.
Well,
and what we say is basically that they all ought to get along. They all have a common forefather. They all, you know, trace their roots to Abraham, and there's no reason why those three religions should be at such loggerheads right now.
Well, to the extent that they do claim a common father in Abraham, is this just a particularly bloody version of sibling rivalry then?
I think it's more than that. I think in the Cold War years, a lot of the hostility was tamped down, and after the Cold War, you know, we've got about 14 wars going on around the world, and a lot of these wars are generated and encouraged by unscrupulous leaders who really want land and oil and money and power. And for example, I mean, you know, in Iraq right now, the Sunnis and the Shiites are fighting. I defy anybody, any of your listeners or any of my students, to tell me the difference between a Sunni and a Shiite.
Oh, you may
I mean,
be.
It happened 1,300 years ago. But so it's, you know, you really need somebody to teach hatred, and you need somebody to really divide those two wings of Islam to get to the point where we have, you know, the kind of insurgency that we're seeing in Iraq.
But the ignorance of that particular brand of internecine hatred, say, between the Sunni and the Shia, in itself causes more problems. I get the notion that there are, you know, across the fruited plain, if you will, mm-hmm. that, you know, there are people who say, oh, the Sunni, oh, the Shia, you know, it's like the difference between the Presbyterians and the Lutherans. It isn't.
Well, probably, you know, in many ways, it's somebody who insulted someone 1,300 years ago.
Or killed.
Or killed. And you know, I mean, most of us, this country can't understand that because we're only 200 years old. So I think we don't understand these deep-seated hatreds.
And yet, I think there is room for us to learn to do so, though, because I was born and raised in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And in third grade, we were taught to refer to the unpleasantness of 100 years before as the War of Northern Aggression.
Right.
And if you catch any self-respecting Southerner out, about two or three highball glasses into his bottle of Jack Daniels, mm-hmm. he will begin to tell you what went wrong at Little Round Top.
That's right.
And what a profound loss it was when Albert Sidney Johnston took that mini ball in his leg and bled to death in his boot at Shiloh.
Exactly.
We have the ability, or at least one geographic portion of this country has the ability to know, to at least comprehend that level of grudge holding. God knows the Native Americans have the ability to comprehend that kind of a grudge.
But most people, we have the philosophy of just letting things move on. We're a very forward-looking culture, and everybody here is a refugee, from generations back of some sort of insult. And our philosophy is move on, and we find it very hard to understand people's aggression towards something that happened 1300 years ago. And, it happens all over the world. We have a friend who was born in Macedonia who was talking about the terrible thing that Croatians did to them. And we thought we missed it. We said, did this happen last week or the week before? And it happened 500 years ago.
Well, exactly. And
I think that we don't understand that. And yet it takes leaders to fan the flames of anger.
Well, it certainly does. And it takes, to a certain extent, it takes the ignorance of leaders to make things even worse. Because to the extent that we don't understand the will, we don't understand the ability of a people to look at, say, the slaughters that took place during the Crusades that were perpetrated by so-called Christians.
That's right.
We don't understand why you would still hold a grudge about that. The other thing, extrapolating from that, is that we don't comprehend the fact that what is going on in Iraq today will engender grudges and blood feuds that will last for 1,000 years, and that there are generations of Americans yet unborn and undreamt of who will pay for the follies of the people who started this war.
Exactly. And really the problem is we went in with all kinds of good intentions, but we didn't know the culture, we didn't know what was going on, and we really upset the whole neighborhood in the Middle East. And God knows what's in for us. And the thing is, we have a whole chapter on Sadat, for example. Sadat spun the 1973 war with Israel into a victory for Egypt because Muslims feel defeated from the Crusades on. Mm-hmm. They were usurped by the Crusades. They were usurped by Western technology, by colonialism, by Western culture. And they feel profoundly defeated. Sadat spun this 1973 war with Israel, which the rest of the world regarded as a stalemate, into a victory for Egypt. And that gave him the political wherewithal to go and sue for a separate peace. So before you have peace, you've got to have some sort of victory for the other side, and then they can negotiate with some kind of pride, and that's what Sadat was able to do.
Well, do you see anything out on the horizon? Is there a Sadat rising anywhere in that tormented corner of the globe?
I don't see that. No, unfortunately, I think that because I don't think people recognize the profound experience of defeat, what that does to people, and how defeat can be exploited so easily. And Sadat was visionary enough to turn that defeat into victory. And I think the leaders of the kind that we've had in the past, like Gandhi and Mandela and so on, who are also men of the cloth, managed to make the people feel victorious enough to really be able to negotiate and to be able to work on peace rather than the kind of wars which are getting worse and worse around the globe, and they're all between people who look alike. I mean, the Jews and the Palestinians, the Northern Irish and the English, the Hutus and the Tutsis. I defy anyone to tell me the difference between the Hutus and the Tutsis in Rwanda.
The Turk and an Armenian.
All over the world,
sure.
In Darfur, I mean, they're Muslim against Muslim, and so most of your wars are really among cultures, and they're wars that are set about by leaders who are doing land grabs and power grabs and who have control of communications and are able to exploit these these deep-seated fears and defeats, feelings of defeat on the part of people.
And by the same token, are also able to keep a very careful catalog of insults and perceived insults so that they can be used to whip up the people at a moment's notice.
Exactly.
You've done a very good job, I thought. You've been most even-handed in this book in dealing with those sorts of insults. It would be very, I was quite impressed and moved by that one particular phrase, anti-Semitism, that very light sleeper.
You know, right.
How very true that is. And it would be very easy to take anti-Semitism as a starting point and use it as a sort of be-all and end-all. You have not done that.
Right.
You have addressed in this book some of the root causes, root insults, root the sorts of things that snowball into greater tragedies in the Muslim world that are not necessarily the Muslims' own making, whether it be the French ban on headscarves
mm-hmm.
in the
That's
name
right.
of separation of church and state, or the equal French ban on yarmulkes.
That's right.
And you know, these are little things that in a secular society here in the United States we go, so take the hat off and go to school.
Right. We don't understand. I mean, you know, Americans, you know, to us the separation of church and state is so important. And it's part of our culture. And so many people here came as refugees from religious persecution. And yet the conflict in France and Germany and Turkey over the headscarf is just the opposite. They had a hard time separating from the Catholic Church in those countries. So to them, they don't let anyone wear yarmulkes or big crosses or any kind of religious item on their person. In government buildings or anything public, and so we really don't understand that. We think live and let live, and it's important for religions to practice their own faith, even if it means wearing a headscarf and so on. But we don't understand that, and I think in many parts of the world, the kind of multiculturalism that we value is just not an option.
And yet, by the same token, while that group of people that I refer to as the normal people
mm-hmm.
In America, these you know rational folk, live and let live folk,
mm-hmm.
while we move through our daily lives, a lot of people are absolutely ignorant of the fact that there is a growing tidal wave of people who want to take us where France and Turkey and Germany are now.
That's right.
And it is American, I call it the religion industry. It's American religion industry fundamentalism. And they want, they're not happy to be equal.
That's
they
right.
want to be superior.
Exactly.
And frankly, I've made the argument, and I appreciate your thought as to whether or not it is correct, that if you got around most of the fringe dogma of Christian fundamentalism versus Islamic fundamentalism. If you sat James Dobson and Osama bin Laden down over tea, they would end the afternoon great friends because they have far more in common than they have in difference.
That's right. And I think the problem with fundamentalism in general, and whether it's Islamic or evangelical or whatever it is, there are fundamentalists in Israel too. I mean, who shoot people on the grounds that God told them to do so. And the problem with fundamentalism in general is that they have one view of religion. It's one book, it's one code of ethics, it's one leader, it's one, you know, it's an intolerance for anything else. And I think you can find in any of the holy books many contradictions. I mean, you can, you know, in the Old and New Testaments, you can find an eye for an eye as a view of anger. You know, in other words, somebody insults you, it's an eye for an eye. But yet, on the other hand, you have turn the other cheek. Jesus said, turn the other cheek. So you can find anything you want in the Old New Testaments. You can also find anything you want in the Quran. So there, I think the great religions, you know, Judaism, Christianity, and the Abrahamic great religions, should be tolerant because there's almost everything you want in the holy books. So the fundamentalists who think there's only one way to do something are really not multicultural.
Well, you know, there is.
Are not tolerant.
Yeah, exactly. I was familiar with a lot of what you brought up in your book, but that's my job to sort of be that way because we follow these sorts of things. But you brought something to me that just sort of made the little hairs on the back of my neck stand on end because we don't think We hear so much about Islamic fundamentalism and, to a slightly lesser degree, American fundamentalism, not so much about Jewish fundamentalism. But you brought up this issue, and it's on page 65 of the book, with regard to organ transplants in the state of Israel.
Right.
This is horrifying. Could you elaborate on that for the listeners a little bit, please?
You know, Israel, to some extent, has turned over, just as the Arab countries have turned over certain things to the religious leaders. And Israel has turned, for example, divorce over to the religious leaders, which makes it a theocracy, in a sense, in many, many ways. It's almost impossible for women to get a divorce in Israel because of the... because it's under the aegis of the religious leaders, in the same way that you know, some of the madrasas, Saudi Arabia has turned over the educational system to the mullahs, and I think that's very dangerous to do that. I think these are secular functions, and they shouldn't be left to religious leaders, because religious leaders have one interpretation, and the only way to go in the future, The only path to peace is really through diversity and through tolerating other people's views, especially on religion.
Well, one of the things, and you do touch on it quite nicely, is that it's difficult. Everything that's in your book is difficult to discuss, either in the United States or just about anywhere else, especially. Where the religious factions are concerned, because the minute that you let, even if you're talking facts, the instant that you start talking facts about one of these sacred cow groups,
right?
If I, for instance, say that I find it appalling that that there are Israelis who believe that fundamentalist Christians really have their best interests at heart, there is a faction who will immediately scream that I am anti-Semitic, even if I make the best potato pancakes in Fayette County, West Virginia. You know, and or if I point out that, there's so much about Islam that is so foreign to my culture and my upbringing. But if I point out that perhaps the words of Muhammad might be holy, but all of the follow-up work, the interpretations, sort of like the interpretations on the words of Sun Tzu, that maybe they're less than holy, somebody wants to kill me.
That's right. It's very scary, and it must be scary to people, moderate Muslims, because you've got 1 billion Muslims in the world, and even if 1% of them are, fundamentalists, you're still, you're still working from a recruitment pool of 10 million people.
That is
so
terrifying.
Really, the numbers are just tremendous, and most Muslims are moderate and do believe in multiculturalism and do believe in the more moderate interpretations of the Quran. But some of these fundamentalists believe in some of the other things that you'll find in the Quran. In other words, kill foreign invaders, or anyone who, kill heathen, anyone who doesn't believe in what you believe in, and that's. That's a different form. That's a fundamentalist form of religion. Just destroy anything that is in your path. And I don't think most Muslims believe that.
Well, you mentioned that line about kill, and God knows the right wingers in America love to cite it. I've heard it 1 million times. Kill the Jews and the Christians.
Right.
And yet one Muslim scholar points out, and you quote him in the book, the next verse is, unless they want peace.
Right. Right. Yeah, right. And they forget about that, don't they?
Sure they did. They absolutely do. I know you're out there doing interviews similar to this in many other fora. Are you finding that your information is being met or being welcomed as something that can be refreshing in this debate?
Well, I mean, we haven't had a fatwa, thank goodness, against us, but I think that most people, agree that you have to reinforce moderate Muslims, but I think justifiably they're terrified of the people who want to blow themselves up as suicide bombers. And one of the things that we do point out is that in the anti-Semitism chapter is that Jews are a convenient scapegoat. In other words, it's acceptable to be anti-Semitic in this part of the world, and it's not acceptable to protest all the corruption and cronyism and misdirected spending that does exist in many Middle East countries where they don't have democracy and so on.
Well, not only do they not have democracy, they don't have an industrial base because the pashas and the sheiks and the mullahs have stashed away all their money in Liechtenstein and the Grand Caymans
and
Switzerland.
Yeah.
And the people can go hang.
That's right. And you really don't. You can't protest that because you'll get killed by the secret police, but you can protest. You know, there are acceptable things. You can be anti-American. You can be anti-Semitic. I mean, there are.
You can be anti-woman.
Anti-female. That's right.
And that all just boggles my mind. But, you know, we don't help, Ms. Tulchin. We don't help. If you don't mind, we've got a couple of minutes left. I would like you to hear, if you haven't heard it already, I would like you to hear a sound clip from a yammerhead by the name of Glenn Beck speaking, introducing America's first Muslim congressman to be elected, a man named Keith Ellison from Minnesota.
We have heard of him, yeah.
We've been talking about this on the program this evening. I would like you to hear what Mr. Beck had to say, if you don't mind. Agnes, roll it, please.
History was made last Tuesday when Democrat Keith Ellison got elected to Congress representing the great state of Minnesota. Well, not really unusual that Minnesota would elect a Democrat. What is noteworthy is that Keith is the first Muslim in history to be elected to the House of Representatives. He joins us now. Congratulations, sir.
How are you doing, Glenn? Glad to be here.
Thank you. I will tell you, may we have 5 minutes here where we're just politically incorrect and I play the cards face up on the table?
Go there.
Okay. No offense, and I know Muslims. I like Muslims. I've been to mosques. I really don't believe that Islam is a religion of evil. I think it's being hijacked, quite frankly. With that being said, you are a Democrat. You are saying, let's cut and run. And I have to tell you, I have been nervous about this interview with you because what I feel like saying is, sir, prove to me that you are not working with our enemies.
That doesn't help, does it?
No, it doesn't help. No. I mean, it shows a real intolerance. I mean, this person hasn't said a word about being an enemy, and he's been elected to Congress, and, you know, I think it's better to hope for the best.
It is, but
just because he's a Muslim, you can't identify him as working with our enemies, and that's a problem. I mean, there really is a lot of anti-Muslim feeling, and we attended a conference to do research for this book. We attended a conference in Belgium on anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, and they're really related. I mean, hatred of a group, and that doesn't help. It doesn't help the path to peace.
And you know, your book in the 90s was on American political rage. That really does spill over into these racial intolerances, doesn't it?
It does. It certainly does.
And you've got a chapter on the computer or internet aspect of hate.
Mm-hmm.
That has changed the complexion of the ability of outrage, hate, anger,
right, whatever,
to span the globe in literally seconds.
That's right, and we don't regulate the internet, and we really have such a fervent belief in the First Amendment, you know, freedom of speech, that we do not want to regulate the internet, and as a result, many groups from all over the world register their domains here, so they spew their hate speech here. And I disagree with my co-author on this because he's a journalist and he really believes very strongly in free speech, but I think hate speech very often turns into hate crime. And as we saw with the Oklahoma bombing, as we saw with the killing of the doctor who performed abortions in upstate New York.
The crucifixion of Matthew Shepard in Wyoming.
Judges, I think it happens all the time, and it's dangerous.
And with the attack on Judge Lefkow,
right,
within a day of that, Senator John Cornyn, a Republican of Texas, was in the well of the Senate saying, I don't condone this killing, but I certainly understand why people do it.
Imagine.
A senator.
Yeah, a senator. Isn't that amazing? That is amazing. But a lot of this, allowing groups from all over the world to register domains here so they can be free to spew their hatred is really unbelievable.
So perhaps there should be some nexus with the United States before you can register your domain here?
There ought to be something to stop them, because I think I think that it's a very fine line, a fuzzy, you know, between hate speech and hate crime, and a lot of these the perpetrators of hate crimes get their inspiration, as it were, from the net.
Well, you know, one of the things, and it appears as an appendix to your book,
mm-hmm.
And it is just it made me just run cold. Appendix B, a simple chart, genocide and the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cold. It's digits and decimal points, and it's two or three digits expressed as a function of millions. And I went down the chart, and I had tears in my eyes by the time I got down to Kosovars.
Mm-hmm.
This is the cost of that hate.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And I really appreciate the fact that you included that in the book. Because those numbers have to become real to us.
And it's chilling. I think the 20th century was the worst century in 2,000 years of recorded history, as the worst century in terms of the numbers of people who were killed. And, you know, very often it's ethnic. It's just what we're talking about. It's very often it's a result of just some kind of ethnic hatred fomented by an ill-meaning leader. Such as 10,000 Muslim men were killed at Srebrenica, and the UN just stood by.
Yes.
And, you know, something like that, just because of this ethnic cleansing, whatever that means, and the fact that people were so stirred up by leaders that they were able to kill in cold blood.
A million Muslim children in Iraq died between the end of the first Gulf War and the beginning of the second one. They didn't die from gunfire. They died for want of basic necessities,
yeah,
like clean water
and chemical weapons
and depleted uranium in their groundwater, in their ground. And again, we just said, well, I remember the quote from Madeleine Albright saying, "I think that's acceptable." And it makes your blood run cold.
It does, and also there's just money may travel at the speed of light. We've really perfected international finance, and it's very sophisticated, but we haven't perfected international governance.
We can spread money at the speed of light, but we can't spread bandages.
That's right. That's a very, very well put. And we have a chapter, for example, on Sierra Leone, which evidently mines the best diamonds in the world, and they smuggle these diamonds out, and the merchants in Antwerp paid for them, and the money was used to provide insurgents in the jungles with guns.
And those are
for 10 years. We had a 10-year civil war just because of the fact that they had the money to do that, and they called it a tribal war, but it really wasn't. It was really a question of war fomented by intermediaries who are making a great deal of money on this diamond gun smuggling racket.
And in many instances, it was a war perpetrated by 9-year-olds.
Right, exactly. And they kidnapped children, and they just destroyed large segments of the population, and nobody did anything. It was remote. It was another corner of the world, and because we just haven't controlled international diamond. The diamond trade. We haven't controlled international finance, and we haven't controlled the gun running, the international gun business, armaments business.
Diamonds are a war's best friend.
Right, that's what we said. Yes.
This is a magnificent book. You do provide at least some hope for a way forward, and I don't want to spoil the. I want people to go out and buy the book.
We do have a politics of hope, so we give our own.
Yeah, this doesn't have to remain this way, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Well, Ms. Tolchin, thank you very kindly, and please tell your co-author give him our best regards. Thank you very much for your time this evening.
You're a great interviewer. Thank you very much.
I look forward to your next book.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Take care. Bye now. Susan Tolchin, A World Ignited, co-authored with her husband Martin Tolchin, How Apostles of Ethnic, Religious, and Racial Hatred Torch the Globe, published by Roman and Littlefield. We've got portals to booksellers at the websites. If you want the book, buy it there. I think we get 2.75687 cents per copy. So, you know, that can pay for like 1/1,000,000th of our monthly phone bill. So, you know, God, buy two copies, okay? It's time for the news. This is the Head On Radio Network. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. Damn, it's 7-0 Pitt. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. San Francisco Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi was selected today as the first female Speaker of the House. House Democrats picked Maryland Representative Steny Hoyer as Majority Leader. In Wisconsin, former Governor and Bush Cabinet Secretary Tommy Thompson has announced his bid for the Republican presidential nomination. He joins former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Arizona Senator John McCain. In Washington, the Bush administration has changed the way it describes hunger. From now on, those without enough food to eat will not be called hungry. Instead, they'll be characterized as lacking food security. At least 35 million Americans, 12% of the population, go to bed hungry at night. In Baghdad, the country's education minister has resigned, he says, until order is restored. Yesterday, 150 educators were kidnapped by gunmen in police uniforms. Some have been killed. 80 remain in custody. 70 have been tortured and released. Also in Iraq, 4 more U.S. soldiers were killed in combat missions today. That brings the November American military death toll to at least 44. Iraq's Shia government says it will arrest the most respected and famous of Sunni clerics, the charges supporting terrorism. Many say his arrest will intensify sectarian violence in the country. In Fort Campbell, Kentucky, a soldier received a life sentence today for conspiring to rape and murder a 14-year-old Iraqi girl and kill her and her family. He is one of 4 soldiers charged in the case. He pleaded guilty to avoid the death penalty. In Africa, Arab, European, UN, and African leaders announced today they will form a joint African Union, UN peacekeeping force to attempt to stop the genocide in Sudan's Darfur region. The Sudanese government is balking at the proposal. As a result of the UN resolution passed last month, the French are inspecting the cargo aboard North Korean ships in the Indian Ocean. They're looking for any nuclear material. South Korea has refused to be part of the international inspection project. In North Carolina, at least 8 people were killed when a tornado struck their mobile home park. 11 have died across the South as powerful storms swept through the area. A flash flood and tornado warning has been issued for Washington, D.C. Nobel Prize-winning free market economist Milton Friedman has died in San Francisco. He was 94.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
An Italian-French research team has found stem cell therapy alleviates symptoms of muscular dystrophy in dogs. The research is the second link in a long chain leading to human trials. U.S. and German geneticists have confirmed that ancient Neanderthals were indeed human by decoding a Neanderthal genome thought to be over 38,000 years old. The ancient species share over 99% of its genes with modern humans. The nation's largest for-profit holiday chain, hospital chain, HCA, will go private. Shareholders approved the $21 billion buyout. It is the second largest leveraged buyout in U.S. history. The biggest radio station owner in America, Clear Channel, will be acquired by an investment group for nearly $19 billion. The transaction is one of the largest deals in American history in which a company is taken private. The Labor Department reports the number of Americans who filed for unemployment benefits last week dropped by 2,000 from the previous week. The Federal Reserve reported last month industrial output was up 0.2%. However, auto production was down. Auto factory output fell for the second month in a row. Light sweet crude is trading at $56.18 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 54 points at 12,305. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
10 minutes after the hour, Mountaineers just went in to tie it up 7-7 with Pitt. Now if we can just find his defensive secondary. And, I don't know, put Tyler Palko on his back a couple of times, things will go well. I know you hate it when I talk sports. I'm sorry. We're going to get a sports talk program going so we can get this all out of our systems, us sports geeks. We might even let some of the sissies that are into soccer talk about that for a little bit. Well, Fred, he's just kicked the ball. Bill, he has indeed, and he's kicking the ball again. Look at it, look at it. He's kicking the ball, he's kicking the ball. Oh, somebody else is kicking the ball. I don't get soccer. I'm sorry. You can hate me for that. I have, however, been corrected, and I don't mind being corrected. You know, God knows, you know, the Flush Flemball probably has to go to the OxyContins by the handful if somebody catches him being wrong, you know, because he puts himself out there. My friends, I have talent on loan from God. I don't do that. It's me and my tiny mind and a lot of help from you guys, for which I am eternally grateful. I think at some point in talking about not going on talk radio, right-wing talk radio or right-wing talk TV or blather TV or yammer TV, I referred to these people as our leaders, and I was quickly corrected. They are not our leaders. They are our elected representatives. And, yes, you are absolutely right. My bad. That one's coming out of the lexicon. Leaders lead. Representatives represent, which would mean that we are the leaders, wouldn't it? And an email in from our friend Andy in the Netherlands. And he says, the way I see it, the so-called free market, going back to what we were talking about in the first hour, I haven't gotten it. The free market means nothing other than a one-party state or a class society by and for the capital owners. As far as Adam Smith's assumption that everyone acts in a moral fashion, well, just take a look at the Bush administration as well as history, blah, 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 and a barnyard epithet. If everyone did act in a moral fashion, well, heaven on earth, right? I support a non-ideological, non-idealistic politico-economic model. Only operational language allowed. For example, someone said, boy, imagine that. Can you imagine tuning in the Hannity job, that, you know, that life support system for a haircut, and hearing a caller, hi, Sean, I support a non-ideological, non-idealistic politico-economic model. Poor Sean would hyperventilate. Right-wingers don't talk like that because right-wingers don't think like that. You know, you've heard me refer to my friend Gronk the caveman. Right-wingers are simple, like Gronk the caveman. They want a little leave it to beaver world that never existed. Gronk want eat, Gronk want house, Gronk want sex, you know. But Mrs. Gronk doesn't get the same rights because they are, after all, right-wingers. Anyway, Andy says, I support a non-ideological, non-idealistic politico-economic model, only operational language allowed. For example, someone says, we want a policy that promotes efficiency in the workplace as well as increasing market value for the product. I say, How much does this decrease the workers' pay, and how much does this increase the workers' insecurity? Right-wing economics is nothing more than classism. Andy also says, P.S., congratulations on the elections. I can't relax just yet myself. We have national elections in the Netherlands on November 22nd. Hope I can relax for a while at least after that. I don't know. What's Dutch for Bush? And are there any running? That should say plenty. Now I'm being facetious and overly simple, but you get my meaning. But speaking of Bushes, dear leader, I wasn't sleeping very well, and I got up rather early. And I like to come in here to the studio and fire up CNN Pipeline, because you get to watch video feeds before the political managers get the razor blade on the videotape. Well, I mean, you get to, metaphorically speaking. So lo and behold, I come in here with a cup of decaf, you know, the broadcaster's breakfast of champions, half a pot of coffee and a half a pack of Marlboro Reds. And I plop down, and lo and behold, there is live footage of Dear Leader in Singapore talking to a bunch of people who really didn't look very old at all. Thought I saw some children in the audience. That's probably the only people. You know, Singapore's a pretty well-educated place. The extremely young or the infirm are just about the only ones that would give a pass to the palaver that comes out of Dear Leader's mouth. But he was speechifying. That's right, Agnes, I said he was speechifying, Dear Leader, in Singapore. And we've got audio for you. And, of course, the big soundbite that he that ran on all the newscasts. The soundbite that has made the rounds in the news today was him saying, we will not tolerate North Korea sending nuclear technology around the world. We would consider that to be a grave threat to our own national security. And, you know, that's he's so ignorant, that's just offensive to contemplate on the face of it. But even going a little bit deeper into it, why is it a threat to the United States for a country 8,000 miles away to have nuclear arms? We don't feel particularly threatened that the French have nukes. We're not threatened that the UK has nukes. We're so unthreatened by the fact that India has nukes that we traded them more nukes for mangoes, for the love of God. The Pakistanis have nukes, and we're sending them all the military hardware we can get into their hands, even though that weird little dictatorial regime stands on the verge of collapse, and the nukes fall into the hands of the taste great or the less filling side, depending on which side you want to consider the American fundamentalist to be. This is, after all, a war between taste great and less filling. So the insanity is manifest. But, you know, we've decided to extend a sort of nuclear Monroe doctrine to the entire world. And news reports indicated a couple of hours ago as we were coming on air that there were, in fact, there was a ship stoppage, in the Indian Ocean, a North Korean vessel that we decided to check out to see if it had any creepy stuff that made Geiger counters go ping. So that was the little bit of BS that the rest of the news media picked up. But you know me, I hear things with a different ear than say some editor at the really big news outlet of America. I hear other things entirely. And it was toward the end of Dear Leader's little speech, with him sitting there doing his best to read it straight out of the book and not stumble over too many words, that he said the following, and we're just going to pick up about... Yeah, you got it queued up there, Agnes? Okay, go.
advancing freedom and democracy as the great alternatives to repression and radicalism. We will take the side of democratic leaders and reformers. We will support the voices of tolerance and moderation across the world. We will stand with the mothers and fathers in every culture who want to see their children grow up in a caring and peaceful society.
And stop it there, dear.
We recognize that every...
We will stand up with the mothers and fathers who... Except the mothers and fathers that we have slaughtered in their tens of thousands in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm sure they would have liked peace. They didn't even necessarily have to have freedom. They didn't have much of it under Saddam, but they did have life. But George Bush saw to it that they don't anymore. But that was what leaped out of Dear Leader's speech. Bounce back to that again, please. Back it up just a little bit further, dear. Yeah, to the gap. There we go.
America is committed to advancing freedom and democracy as the great alternatives to repression and radicalism. We will take the side of democratic leaders and reformers.
Pause. You notice when he's given a speech internationally, he says democratic leaders and reformers, but when he's referring to the party that opposes him in the United States, he can't call it the Democratic Party. That alone tells you that that crap is intentional. They're trying to emphasize the RAT at the end of the word, the Rat Party. That's, you know, that was one of those cute little things that Newt Gingrich dreamed up about 12 years ago, 13 years ago. But get that. Get the hubris. Get the pride. Get the smug self-certainty of the notion that the only alternative to radicalism and despotism in the world is our brand. That must just play hell with the Swiss. And not any too good with the Singaporeans either. Since neither are modeled on our version of so-called democracy. Unpause it, dear.
We will support the voices of tolerance and moderation across the world.
Will you really?
We will stand with the mothers and fathers in every culture who want to see their children grow up in a caring and peaceful society.
Pause it, please, because from the first time I heard that this morning, this has made me want to get the Elvis gun. I mean, this is a real shoot the TV moment. The idea that he would mention the mothers and the fathers across the world who want yada 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 when all he has done in Iraq is slaughter mothers and fathers. I could scream. I'm not going to. It makes me sick. Can you imagine? You had a job. You had a wife. You were one of those moderate Muslims we were talking about with Ms. Tolchin a little bit ago. And you went out and you did your job. And you had a beautiful son or two and a couple of daughters. And one night, in a distant whistle, suddenly you're alone in the world. And you're knocking the brick dust off of your skin. And you're no longer a father. And you're no longer a husband. And you have no precious daughters playing in the desert sunshine. And you have no little son who comes and tugs on your sleeve in the morning and says, "Daddy, can I go to work with you? I want to be like Daddy." It's all gone. And all that is left there is to fill all of that empty space is hate. And the sad thing is, it's not just hate for George Bush. It's hate for you. And it is hate for me. And as Ms. Tolchin pointed out, it is a hate that will be passed, yea, verily, generation unto generation, unto the ends of the earth, for you and yours. And the mere word American will be enough to justify your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson's throat being slit. and why? I submit to you, March of 2003, I have lost my patience. And this man wants to stand up in front of a civilized audience in a fairly civilized, albeit somewhat dictatorial, little nation, little city-state, and lecture them about what the United States thinks of mothers and fathers in the world. It is damn near more than I can stand. And he talks about how we will fight those radical forces, and yet at the same time, Pam Atlas, as mentioned by our good friend David at the beginning of the program, recently called, yesterday, as a matter of fact, yesterday, called for the State Department to be bombed and for American diplomats to be murdered. And weird little freepers living in their parents' basement, 39 years old, in Woodland Hills, California, buy little blue kangaroo stamps and envelopes at the post office at the same time they're sending a $15 money order to Catherine Harris and fill it with boric acid and send it to Keith Olbermann and David Letterman and Charles Schumer with vile, vile, filthy, obscene messages attached in an effort to make the nation think that it is being attacked by a poisoner. And nothing is done. All the FBI served a search warrant, but they said they were looking for left-wing radical materials. They had it wrong. He's a right-winger. He's like all the killers in the United States. He's a follower of George Bush. Pam Atlas is a follower of George Bush who wants to murder diplomats and bomb the State Department. And George Bush stands there and says that we will fight terrorism. Well, he will fight something, but by God, he won't fight it at home because these are his own. These are his shock troops. These are his beloved. These are his base that are attempting and in many ways succeeding in spreading fear and misery and terror and death inside the confines of the continental United States. And he dares lecture anyone abroad. How dare he? Let's go to the phones. Chipperback is on the line. Hey, Chipperback, how you doing? Good to hear from you.
This is Albert, Bob. How are you?
Agnes is on codeine, okay? So
it's okay. It's fine. I'm good. I mean, at least the right-wingers are getting exposed as being terrorists. About time. I mean, how much more can we take of this with... And I'd still like to see a bottom to the anthrax attack, which was quite coincidentally part of 9/11 that everyone seems to forget.
Yeah, I haven't forgotten that George Bush and Cheney and Rummy and Ashcroft and that crowd started taking Cipro a week before they happened and a week before 9/11 went down.
Yep. What do you expect? I mean, we're over here... I just wanted to talk about privatization real quick. I've been having some online discussions, I guess we could say, with someone who tries to call themselves a libertarian.
Oh, God, you poor thing.
I know. And this guy will sit there and rattle on about how everything has to be privatized. Everything. Stem cells have to be privatized. All jobs have to be privatized. And then at the same, in the same breath, this guy is an immigrant, actually. It's also kind of funny. Immigrant of African-American descent from one of the Pacific Islands, Caribbean Islands, he starts off running his mouth about the Mexicans, the illegal aliens. And I can't but help but think, the reason we have the immigrant problems that we do is because of the privatization of those banana republics down there in Central and South and Mexico. I mean, if it wasn't for us going down there and raping those countries for their copper, their wood, their bananas, their fruit, why would we wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing today? Besides the fact that who's the ones that who are the ones that hire these illegals to begin with? Oh, more privatization. And they think privatization in Iraq is doing well. I mean, these people, they think that, you know, they think everything's doing great and we're not covering enough positive stories in Iraq. You know, in the same breath, you'll sit there and say, well, listen, where's the electric? Where's the water? You know, you wonder, I mean, you were saying, you know...
Where's the flush toilets?
Exactly. Where's the drinking water? I mean, who needs to flush a toilet if you don't got the water to... You know? I mean, you know, you were saying quite eloquently right before I got on here, you were saying about how, you know, what else do we expect these fathers, brothers, sisters, cousins to do when their families are blown into red mist? I mean, it's human. It's fundamental humanism that if you get your family blown to red dust, red mist, in front of you, or when you were at work, or what have you, and you're going to blame the people responsible. And what are you going to become? You're not going to become the baker anymore. Yeah, you might bake in the day, but you're going to be planting IEDs at night.
Sure.
I mean, these are simple, fundamental basics of human psychology that these people just. They totally ignore. They ignore, like Tom Cruise. I mean,
now that's just the damnedest thing, Albert. You just tied right wingers in with Tom Cruise. A little golf clap for that. That's just hear, hear.
Thank you. Well, yeah. I mean, that's what it is. It's psychotic. They're psychotic. They're psychotic.
And they are dirt dumb. Please don't oversell them. They are dirt dumb. They are incapable of the thought that gets you to the place where you and I are.
And that's what's the most frustrating. Because, I mean, it's so damn simple. I mean, and then, I mean, you know, money and corruption and all that stuff, and I can see that where, you know, these, whatever his name was that sent all the letters to Olbermann, and I mean, it's like, you know, for at the same time, you got to laugh at it, but at the same time, it's just so, like, hello? You are a king hypocrite. A king hypocrite. Mr. I hate all the Muslims because all Muslims, you'll always hear this. Maybe throughout history, not all terrorists have been Muslim, but today, all Muslims are terrorists, or all terrorists are Muslim, or some nonsense. Yeah, that's what it is. Not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslim.
Yeah, but that's a universal affirmative, and we all know it's only partially convertible.
I mean, can I get an aneurysm, please?
Yeah, one to go.
I mean, yeah, because it's just it is so unbelievably, ridiculously stupid and infantile that these people will sit there, be the hip. I mean, Ted Haggard, hello. I mean, it doesn't ever stop. It doesn't stop. And, I mean, you know, we sit here and we got to listen to guys now on our side that were, quote-unquote, on our side, like Carvel, right, Mr. Alien Head.
Yeah, old Snakehead.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, I got a theory on that one, Albert.
Yeah, go ahead.
Carvel is out there being a stalking horse for Hillary.
Yeah, I agree.
Whether or not, you know, trying to destroy Howard Dean now is, you see, the state Democratic Party executives are in love with Howard Dean. Okay, the state Democratic Party director in Alabama and the state Democratic Party director in Utah and Idaho and Colorado and Texas and Wisconsin and Minnesota, they all love Howard Dean, because Howard Dean transformed the national party into one that wanted to be national again and not just run that little band of blue states that sort of, you know, runs down through the Northeast and hops and skips through Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin and lands in Washington and goes down the coast. He wanted to create a party that could compete in every state. And as a result of that, they've created this idea that we would have had a 50-member majority and not a 30-member majority if only Howard Dean had let Rahm Emanuel have his way, which is just crap. But the fact of the matter is, and it's the dirty little secret, is James Carville wants Hillary to be the nominee. And right now, with the success of these November elections, what you see is James Carville's fear that the one person, it ain't Gore, it ain't Edwards, it's not Wesley Clark, the one person who could get in Hillary's way would be Howard Dean if he suddenly decided he had a shot.
Hey, you know,
Ain't that creepy?
It is creepy. And these people, that's all. It's just power. And these are the kinds of Democrats Democratic Party members that we just really need to purge. I mean, this is just nonsense.
Well, you ain't purging Rahm anytime soon. I'm sorry to tell you.
Well, we purge. We're the leaders, remember?
Yeah, I know.
We're the leaders. I mean, you know, so it's up to us, and it's up to everyone listening and everyone who actually has a soul that listens to that soul. I mean, it's up to us to sit there and see this hypocrisy. I mean, we cannot go the way of the Republican Party. We can't sit there and go and get all arrogant now that we have a little power and get complacent again. I mean, I like that we had a tremendous amount of turnout. You know, and at the same time, I mean, it's not enough because we need to not only stay vigilant, we need to make sure our people that are supposed to represent us maintain and do what they're supposed to do, and none of this power, corruption, and all the other stuff. Did you, not to get off on a tangent, but this is something I really want
go,
to
go, man, go.
That, you know, it really bothers me, and did you see what happened in UCLA just the other day?
What, the taser incident?
Yeah. Did you see the video of that?
I only heard about it. I'm looking at I've got the link to it right now, and I can't see it.
Bob, it's long, and it is unbelievable. This kid, you know, whatever, he's in I've been to many universities, and I've gone into their libraries and, you know, what have you. I've never been asked for ID, but apparently they asked for this guy for ID. He didn't present it, so he was leaving. On his way out, the cops are there. They tase him. They tased him at least six times. I heard that you can hear the kick of the taser. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they're telling him to get up. Get up, get up, get up. Get up, get up, get up. First off, you can't get up. Someone tases you, you lose all voluntary muscle control. It's gone.
Yeah, you might really, really pee yourself, but that's about the best that you're going to hope for under the influence of a taser.
Yeah, that's about, and it's just, you know, And I see this. I mean, and I'm not trying to say all Democrats, you know, the Democratic people are all, you know, because there are some of them that enable this stuff. But, you know, I see this as this whole power grab. This is, I mean, we're fitting into Brill's 14 points of fascism more and more and more. I mean, you'll have people, of course, on the free press, oh, they should have been listening to the police. You know, I mean, there's got to be a point here where we can sit here and police, okay, you know, you want to go get murderers, you want to go get these kinds of rapists and all that stuff, go get them, okay? But, you know, when you're sitting there tasing people because they're in a library using the computer without an ID card, I mean, this is just getting out of hand. I mean, I can give you, you know, I got a speeding ticket this weekend because I was going too fast, but I was in one of those speed traps in terms of, you know, you got to get out of you're getting out of the town and, you know, it's 55 miles an hour, and I was right on that curve, and, you know, you can gun it because there's no more houses. You're not in town anymore. But that's a speed trap. And, you know, I can. It's kind of slimy. It's kind of sneaky. It's kind of, you know, but I can see and I'll pay that. But when you start tasing me because I didn't produce my ID fast enough or something ridiculous on that level, this is going too far. We need to stop this stuff. And it bothers me because it's like these are college students now. I mean, you know, what's next, bullets?
Hey, you know, that's but Albert, that's California.
Yeah.
You know, that's the state that Arnold wants to create. And that is that's also the state that is the direct descendant of the brutality of Ronnie Reagan
and Jerry Brown.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I'm reminded, you know, Dead Kennedy's California Uber Alice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, it doesn't, and the thing is, it's I'll be honest with you, Albert. It's only going to get worse.
I do think that.
I mean, did you follow the election today of the majority leader, the House majority leader?
Should have been Mercer.
I got mixed feelings about that. I think it was a Hobson's choice, the horse by the door or no horse at all. Mirtha would have. They were just from the stuff I was already seeing banging around on the internet. They were ready to dredge up the entire Abscam scandal and just crucify Mirtha all over again, which certainly would have taken all the teeth out of the idea that we were going to run a clean Congress. And frankly, if you go and you listen to the Mirtha tapes, they're not very impressive, Albert.
Aren't they?
No. That's him saying they offer him $50,000. He says, "I'm not interested at this time." And then he suggested, you know, if they really want this to happen, what they need to go do is go to his district and put a bunch of money in banks around Johnstown.
Yeah, and invest. Yeah, he wanted an investment.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't impressed. So, you know, I knew where that was going with the right wing. On the other hand, you get Steny Hoyer, who is DLC through and through.
Yeah. And it just...
And I wonder, you know, I'm enough of a political cynic to wonder if I was witnessing yet another, you know, round 792 of wrestling for the masses.
Yeah. And a lot of people feel that way. And, you know, I do have to give them, it is justified. I mean, now that the happiness is, you know, kind of, that we won is kind of wearing off, I mean, you know, now the reality is starting to set in. And we have a big job to do. I mean, we have more work now than we did before Election Day. I mean, now is not the time to become apathetic. I'm going to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it until I turn blue, because we have to remain vigilant. We have to remain active. We have to sit here and not allow this politics as usual. I mean, I am not a fan of Hillary Clinton, and I can count the ways beyond the horizon in terms of why she shouldn't be running. Why, you know what, stay a senator. I'm not saying I will, you know, hey.
What the people in New York wanted. Congratulations, people of New York.
Yeah.
I hope your relationship with her is very good, but I don't want her to be the president.
I really don't. And it's not that I don't want a woman to be a president. I want to see Nancy Pelosi be the president. But I'd like to see her be not typical. I want to see her be extraordinary. And I want to see her be honest. And I want to see her be straight. I mean, everyone has their, you know, political puppet strings. But for us to sit here and just allow these, you know, allow the puppet show to continue, it's just, you know, that we will doubly fail if we don't remain vigilant and we don't continue to, you know, demand accountability and demand, most importantly, demand transparency. I mean, we need transparency in government now more than ever. I mean, we need to, you know, get rid of all these horrible things that they've put in for the past 6 years, and then some. We need to get rid of what Clinton did in terms of the FCC. We need to get rid of, I mean, let's try a real fair trade agreement, not something written by the, you know, fascists. I mean, fascists don't really care if it's, because they're corporatists. They don't care whether it's going to be Democrats or Republicans. If the Democrats are just as, you know, conservative, you know, with you hear all the right-wingers talk about how this was a conservative victory. Please don't chase the cat. You know, if you sit there and talk about like that, and I love it. I'm on the phone, so of course the kids.
Oh, yeah, it all goes to hell when you're on the phone, man. We live that. Who are you talking to, Daddy? What is that?
What is that? Oh, now. Yeah, look at me.
Look, Daddy, I got the cat by the tail. Looky. Oh, no, don't worry about it. We live there.
Yeah.
Well, no, but hey. I admire and I hope other people have the same degree of or desire for vigilance that you have. As long as you're doing it, you know, I hope you can inspire others to. I hope we will inspire others to. I am sincere in saying that I intend to be rougher on this Democratic majority because they're mine. If I didn't, you know, it's tough love, you know. If I didn't care, you know, if you didn't care about, you know, about your little ones, you know, what the hell with what she does with the cat, you know. But you love her, and you don't want to see the cat hurt her, and you don't want to see the cat hurt.
Exactly.
It's the same kind. You know, these aren't Olympian gods in Washington. They only think they are.
Exactly. I mean, and that's another reason we. You know, I mean, I'd even like to see the Democrats within themselves, the Democratic Party. I see the Democrats, you know, they get us talking about Democrats, and it rolls off the tongue too easily. It's sort of like, you know, the demonization of liberals, you know, just saying the word liberal is a horrible thing when it really means freedom and all the other great stuff that it does mean. But
yeah.
Same thing with the Democratic Party. You know, the Democratic Party needs to seriously do some things to actually reinstall the faith. I mean, because if the Democrats want to continue to win, the Democratic Party wants to continue to win, they're going to have to motivate the people who are too apathetic. They're going to have to show all the people that don't vote because they don't believe in the two-party system, because they think that they're both the same. They think they're two, you know, they're two wings of the same evil vulture, okay? And those people are going to need to be shown,
And we are going to have to be shown, as supporters ourselves, we're going to have to demand this, that they show that they're not just the Republican Party, just, you know, with a different set of puppeteers, that they are essentially going to limit their terms. You know, if they, I mean, I can see, you know, these guys are doing great, great, great. Well, guess what? We always need fresh blood. Okay, we need fresh blood to continue to motivate, to continue to inspire, to continue to work towards.
Now, see, I'm gonna take issue with you on term limits, because okay. Term limits make it too easy for the electorate to be even more damn lazy than they already are. Oh well, we don't have to worry about it. He's term limited; he'll come out anyway. You know what? If he sucks, then he needs to be gone before the term limit comes along. You know, there are term limits built into the Constitution. They're called elections.
True.
And if you've got a bad member of Congress and you continue to have a bad member of Congress, it's not the member of Congress's fault. It is the electorate's.
You know, I give you that.
In Illinois, it is not John Lash's fault that John Lash didn't beat Denny Hastert. It is the people of that district's fault that Denny Hastert did not lose. Michigan's 11th, where Tony Truppiano was running. I mean, I'm in a state of what the hell about the entire state of Tennessee right now. You know, because they confirmed, and it broke my heart because I am a born Southerner. It confirmed that racism is still alive and well, and it is alive and well in a percentage of the electorate that is higher than I would ever even want to admit.
Well, and that's a fact. I mean, racism is racism, and it is, it's a virus.
And it's alive, man. I mean, it's not laying dormant. It's not the chicken pox that goes into the spine and turns into the shingles once in a while. No. It's virulent. It's in the bloodstream of the body politic of the Deep South.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do, Bob.
yeah, we do, Albert. But you know, I'm glad you're up for the job. I'm glad you're up for keeping your eye on it.
You know, well, once you see it, you can't help but see it. And I think that's another, you know, a lot of people, they get too lost in, oh, Britney Spears, and who cares about Britney Spears?
Oh, my God, did you hear Oprah did not get an invitation to Tom and Katie's wedding in Italy? Jesus, can you imagine that?
Oh, well, Oprah's not a Scientologist, and we can't have outside thought interfering with our protocols. Scientologist, yeah, there's another.
The protocols of the
Ron Hubbard.
The protocols of the learned elders of the planet Zarvon, for the love of God. Oh!
And Grand Overlord Xenu. Uh-oh, have you ever seen that?
Yes.
There's a piece of loose leaf paper with some scribblings on pencil that, I don't even want to talk about it because it just drives me nuts. These Scientologists are another, woohoo, woohoo. if anyone reads this paper, they will die.
L. Ron Hubbard was P.T. Barnum reincarnated.
He was.
I mean, Scientology is this way to the egress.
Well, he was good buddies with Crowley, wasn't he?
I do believe so, yeah.
And there was some other Satanist that he was involved with, and it just makes me, I mean, these people are just all, when do I get my own universe so I can just...
You know, see, I've got that thing that goes on for me, Albert, and this is just going to betray me as the weirdo that I am, but if people haven't figured that out by now, it's just too damn bad. I've read enough of that bizarre theoretical physics that I don't understand in the first place to get the notion that there are alternate universes.
I agree.
And I think of this all. I think of these alternate universes where I'm not what I'm doing. You know, there's an alternate universe where I'm an actor. There's one where I'm a world famous poet. There's one where I'm a starving poet. There's one where I'm an archaeologist, or a short order cook, or a sous chef, or God only knows what. But I'm fascinated with the idea of those alternate universes. And I just, you know, I want an alternate universe where the Bush family is just, you know.
On Jerry Springer Show?
Just Midwestern tornado trash that they really are. Because the heart of all of this scientific, pseudo-scientific, science fiction blabber palaver that I'm thinking about here is that there is some universe that actually has an element of justice to it.
That's And that is absolutely my hope, and maybe that's one of the hard lessons of living in this reality. And that's probably maybe why we're here. I mean, we can get all kinds of metaphysical on it, and nothing wrong with that. I love talking about that kind of stuff. And
but there ain't no dress rehearsal here. This is all you get.
That's right. And as far as we know, I mean, in terms of even science, I mean, sometimes science is some of the most blind. And, you know, I know people are going to gasp at this one, but, you know, I sometimes really look at science, especially cosmology, and I see how much we don't know, even though we're supposed to be able to predict. Like, that's part of, like, a theory. When you have a theory of something, politics, science, what have you, you're supposed to be able to make predictions and then find that those predictions are true. Well, a lot of times in cosmology, they make predictions and then find that their predictions were not even close.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's and when that happens, it's kind of like, do you finally become honest about it, or do you not become honest? For me, I don't even really see that much honest. I mean, I do see some, and I do see more, but I don't see as much honesty even in the sciences as there should be. I mean, we look at guys,
Well, that's what Dr. Sloan was talking about the other night. He said, you know, you can't have honest work in science when you're doling out $2 million for remote prayer studies for brain aneurysms.
That, or what about even, let's not go on to a fringe, let's even talk about Redshift. You know, they talk about Redshift, Halton Arp, if you ever heard of him.
Yeah.
Halton Arp, he made up, you know, he was actually an understudy of Hubble. And, you know, he came up with all these different galaxies that are peculiar in terms of looking at gamma ray bursts and quasars and stuff like that, and how their redshifts and their alignment with galaxies didn't match up with the actual distances that redshifts would say that it was supposed to be. Essentially, he made up all these observations, wrote a book, and he actually came out and showed, and even Carl Sagan gave him credit for it. Okay, Carl Sagan, you remember him, Cosmos.
Sure.
He even said, you know, if he's right, then we're really wrong, and we continue to be blind to what we don't know because we don't even know that we don't know. Here, Rumsfeld.
Yeah, I was about to say, careful, Don.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, you know, there's so much about this stuff that, you know, we blow $341 billion in Iraq. We blow all this stuff. And what are we doing? What are we doing as a species? What are we doing that's actually furthering? I mean, stem cells are privatized. Why? So people who can afford the $10 million treatment are the only ones that are going to get it. And all the poor people, you know.
Yeah, all the good scientific advancements really came, at least the ones that we were responsible for in the United States, they came through government activity.
Yeah, exactly. Taxpayer funded. I mean, we're together as a civilization, and I don't know. Bob, I don't know if I know how to verbalize this, but I'm going to try because we're together as a civilization. And, I mean, if we weren't together as a civilization, we'd be living amongst ourselves in solitary caves in the woods. Now, we, in terms of some part of our development, we came and figured, hey, it's better and an easier life if we get together and build a community and to protect ourselves, gather food, grow food, do all that stuff. Now we are, here we are, 10, 20,000 years later, after we started initially coming into villages and such, and we're over here talking about not putting money into the things that the very most important things that we should be putting money into, but we're putting money more into $341 billion into bombing and killing other villages.
It really should make you run screaming into the night, shouldn't it?
It certainly does. It makes me mad. It makes me gray because I can't sit there and, I mean, we're on this planet. We're stuck here. We're just like we're all stuck here together. We need to sit there and literally, come on, we need to move forward. And I do think that, you know, I mean, I don't want to see more of the same from this Democratic Congress.
No, it better by God be different.
Yeah, we better start seeing. I mean, you know, I know they're trying to play the political game.
That's why, Albert, right now is the time to start identifying potential primary candidates for 08. I got one more call I want to get to, though, Albert. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
You take it easy. Bye now.
Always. Bye.
And to Michelle in California. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guy. Guy. What am I saying? Hey, guy.
I'm a guy. I'm a guy.
Well, it was funny because I was thinking about you guys talking about this. I'm like, oh, my God, I've sat in on some of those conversations. They get pretty intense. I told Agnes that I had to call and share with you my experience as an inspector at the polls, you know, for the election day. And it's humorous, mind you, in the sense that, you know, well, I did have one machine go down. mind you, I'm out here in California, so I'm gal from Cal, you know, in that terrible, terrible place that Arnold lives. We have one machine go down, and I called them at 7:46 in the morning, and they never brought it. In fact, the lady that was supposed to oversee my area came right when I was at lunch, and she told my clerk, well, you guys have enough. You have enough machines. Don't worry about it. But it was not a good situation. But what the funny part was, is okay, a lot of the elders had a hard time. We use Eastlake by heart, and it's a dial. It's not touch screen. And then we have a VVPAT, which has the paper trail. But you don't take it home with you. It stays in the box. And
well, that's where the paper trail should be.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I mean, this isn't an ATM receipt. The paper trail is there to be counted in the case of weirdness.
Right, exactly. Well, so a couple of the elders would ask one of us to help them, and I usually, since I was kind of watching over everything, I was the one that would help them do that. And they would bring in their little voter cards that they got from their party. And mind you, I live in Orange County, so that suggests, well, to most people know that it's a pretty conservative county. So here I am helping them dial to Arnold, you know.
Oh, God.
I know, it was such torture. And then, you know, they had the Parents' Right to Know Act on their parental notification.
Yeah. How'd that come out, by the way?
I had fight. How did it go?
Yeah, the parental notification.
They lost. We won. No on 85.
Yay.
Yeah, you know what? In fact, we gained 9 more precincts than last year. It was 73. So on Arnold's special deception, you know, special election. Anyway, I called it the special deception. Anyway, so then, you know, I'm having to help them do this. Then I have one person that spoke Spanish, you know, so I'm having to kind of guess, you know, what the name. It was just...
Oh, you poor thing.
Oh, it was such torture. I wanted to turn them around and say, can I just talk to you for a second? I know you got this in the mail from a party that tells you that they're working for you, but are your pharmaceuticals cheaper? I mean, is your cost of living easier? You know, but of course you can't do that. So I truly believe I truly gave on Tuesday, November 7th.
You were the citizen that was anticipated.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure you were dog tired, but at the end of the day, it had to feel good.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, it felt good to tell people that they had no right to question why people didn't have to show ID.
Eat it and smile.
I looked at him and I said, really, you have no right to question whether they have the right to vote. I'm in that position. I've got the document. Don't worry about it. You know, in fact, your position today is to vote and make your vote count, you know? So it was just, yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, I felt pretty good. I think I wasn't anticipating dialing Arnold.
Hello, who is this?
I thought I'd have to share that with you.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
And you take care of that, Agnes. And when she gets to feeling better, she can beat you up more, and you'll like it. You know what? You got to talk about soccer legs on men. I like soccer and their legs. So that's why I watch. Soccer.
I will let Agnes open the phone. Open the phones and the microphone for that. I'm staying out. You
okay,
take care.
Love you guys. Bye bye.
Bye now. That's it. By the way, WVU 17, pit 14. Second quarter.
And the guy's soccer legs still look great.
Yeah, I'm not into hair. But thanks everybody for joining in this evening. Hope you enjoyed our conversation with Susan Tolchin. If you want to follow up, it's a book worth reading. I already read it. Remember, I don't put books on this show that I think suck. Agnes produced through a sort of codeine-induced haze. Brian Reznor announced John Fox engineered. Ben Birch maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasting at whiterosesociety.org. Remember, he doesn't send a bill. You got to do the right thing. Peter Godbold is our IT professional. We have wonderful mods and news editors at headonradionetwork.com and in the chat room. All these programs happen because the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and their members get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream, and they're saving the American dream by supporting this network. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Quality News Network. In Baghdad, as many as 80 kidnapped victims are still in captivity, according to Iraq's higher education minister. The 70 who were released had been badly tortured. They were all taken from a downtown Baghdad building in a brazen kidnapping by armed gunmen on Tuesday. The U.S. military reports four more U.S. soldiers were killed in combat missions in Iraq. That brings the American military death toll to at least 44 so far this month. South of Baghdad, in a rural area, U.S. forces killed 9 suspected al-Qaeda insurgents today in a raid. 15 Iraqis were killed in deadly attacks around the capital. On Capitol Hill today, House Democrats picked their leadership positions for the 110th Congress. In an upset for the number 2 job, the hand-picked selection of soon-to-be Speaker Nancy Pelosi was defeated. Maryland Representative Steny Hoyer beat Pennsylvania Representative John Murtha to become the next majority leader. Pelosi herself was unanimously selected to be the next Speaker of the House when the new Congress convenes in January. President Bush is in Singapore as part of his Asian trip to shore up American allies. The president gave a speech in which he called for a rejection of any tendency towards isolationism. The North Korean nuclear standoff is also on the president's agenda. Pakistan said today that it successfully test-fired a new version of a medium-range nuclear missile. The North Korean-designed missile was launched at the end of Pakistani military exercises conducted this week. Chinese President Hu Jintao has indicated that China is prepared to help Pakistan construct several nuclear power plants over the next few decades. Republican Senator John McCain will file paperwork today to form a presidential exploratory committee for the 2008 race. Former Wisconsin Governor and Bush Cabinet Secretary Tommy Thompson also said he's planning to form a committee to seek the 2008 Republican presidential nomination.